Hello, welcome to the Scotchcast, episode one. I guess. So, for those on our feed, this is an extension of the LinkedInCast. We'll be doing this when there isn't enough Guild Wars 2 news to be bothered with. This is the Scotchcast. We will not be on topic. I will warn you up front, and we probably won't talk about Guild Wars 2 at all. Joining me today is Durin.
We'll talk. We played Guild Wars. We'll talk about Guild Wars.
I don't know.
It is a game that we played this week.
I did not play any Guild Wars this week. Sadly. I guess. I guess.
I told myself I was going to get into it.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. How are you, Cynic?
Thurbleton is also here.
No one here is Scottish, and I am not drinking any scotch. This name does make sense.
No, like Scotch.
We workshopped it. That's the problem. It was a name by consensus.
And well, when was the last time you played Guild Wars, Cynic?
Ah, shit. It would be probably December? Halfway through December, probably?
Wait, how come you answer his question and you don't answer my question?
Because I hadn't introduced him yet. Because I could have answered your question, but then I would never have introduced Thurbleton. And he'd just like this.
Because I'm a journalist with integrity and I ask those important questions.
Wait, are you a journalist? Do you even have a blog?
No.
Wait. Do you have your reviewer card?
I apologize to all journalists for that association. Like, having a blog does not make you a journalist. I need to set that up front. You're not a journalist if you have a blog.
You asked the question. I am a journalist. I'll make a blog right now.
But it doesn't make you any less of a journalist.
Tumblr. Welcome to the Scotchcast. Again, this is not going to be about anything. We're going to start off with what we've been playing, like the old LinkedInCast, then move on to probably the news. But if at any point we veer sharply sideways, we're going to stay sideways until it's no longer entertaining. That's how this is going to roll.
We already started off sideways.
So, I think I'm going to go with the one who probably hasn't been playing much for us. Thurbleton, what have you been playing? What have you been doing? Anything. What have you been doing with your life?
I've been doing school and all that, but mostly playing Guild Wars. It's this fun MMO. I've also been playing this bit of Dishonored. Been streaming through that, trying to get... I played a while ago, I played the fun way, and now I'm just trying to play the funner way of just killing everyone.
Yep. How's that working? By the way, how's that working out? Because you've been doing it for a couple weeks now, right?
It's hilarious. I've done like two episodes. Mm-hmm. I got a third recorded that I'll post on the own 3D thing.
Right.
I die a lot,
mm-hmm.
but it's really fun.
Oh, cool.
Like just the way this, it's such a fun way to kill people.
If you were to recommend to someone who started playing Dishonored how to play this game.
It's, I mean, people want to do that like the fun stealthy way, but then it's worth another playthrough. Just right. Setting it to hard, because the load, like for most people, the load times are really quick.
Right.
So it's worth it just like, even going through the first few levels, it's just like, I'm going to try and kill everyone. Because then like it's, before you don't want to try and interact with any of the guards. You want to avoid them, knock them out and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The sword fighting is really fun. It's this whole like the timing parry thing to get
system.
The
parry. Yeah.
And when you parry, you go in slow motion, you can go for the kill and mm-hmm. all the different environmental things. Like I can't wait to start like, whirlwinding people back into walls of light and watching them get electrocuted.
Okay. So you say you say play how you want to first time through, no, either way, but know that there's a
fire and then play the other way the second time through.
Right. Now, again, how long is that game? Like 15 hours or so? Or was it?
It's pretty short. I mean, like it's you can take your time and try and do the explore all the world, get all the money and all that to try and stretch it a bit longer, but it's not terribly long in terms of number of levels.
Okay.
I want to say 7 or 8.
Hmm. Well, about how many hours?
It's detailed. I want to say like 8 to 10 hours is
doing two playthroughs isn't like impossible. Wouldn't take you too long, like 20 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And you'd be fast the second time through as well.
Yeah. Now, Guild Wars, that does take a while to beat.
Oh, I don't think I have it in me. Until like the next expansion or whatever to play like a second character through. I can't see myself doing it like at all. Is someone?
I got a buddy who picked up the game and he's like, he's just, a level 15. I'm just trying to like the level. It's like, just do the crafting. And then I came to realize, is it worth it for the crafting for your first time playing through? Or do you want to try and explore the levels? Because it's so easy to level.
I crafted. I did everything in my first time through. Playing Ghost 2 my first time through, I did essentially everything I wanted to do out of the gate. And that got me. The awesome thing about Guild Wars 2 is that that lets you level. Everything you do gives you XP. So I gained a bunch of levels through crafting. I gained a bunch of levels through exploration alone. And yeah, just killing shit and doing missions. Like, the only thing I didn't do was the personal story.
It's good. Really, you only do like personal story up to the races, and then once you get to the big story, just stop.
Yeah, I just stopped, and that was like, apparently when I went back and played it through normally, because I went and did all the personal story in like one stretch. I was like, yeah, I made the right decision by not continuing with this, unless the NOS mission has been significantly reworked and stuff. The dungeon stories are good. Entertaining. I'll say, but not. Yeah.
Well, and then it's the little bit of Guild Wars stuff we're going to talk about today is since there's not a lot of news happening with it.
Are you sneaking Guild Wars 2 stuff into the Scotchcast? Is that what just happened?
I just put a PSA to people listening. You should check out Tiesta Plateau and Wayfarer Foothills because they're going to change it in the next month or now.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Just check those zones out before they change forever.
Wait, which ones those? Tiesta Plateau and.
Wayfarer Foothills, the Norn starting, and Tiesta Plateau, the Char second zone.
Second zone.
So how are they changing them?
I don't know. It's just like, on top of everything else they've announced with the news, the one little tidbits they added are that there's something happening in those zones in the months to come.
Anyway.
Like, I think it's going to be a 3-month thing. So we'll talk about it later next Guild Wars podcast.
Anything else, Stapleton? Anything you've been reading? Have you finished that book, finally?
Books!
No, I've been reading a technical manual on how to make an Arduino work.
Oh, cool. Wait, all right. How deep into Arduinos have you gone? What would you be using them for?
There's this web app that I saw, if I can get this working. I've always wanted to make a clock that is shaped like run like a thermometer, I guess, like an old timey, I'm not sure if they have this in Australia, but the thing that like measures your power intake. It's basically, it's a circular meter and the meter moves and the dial stays in the same spot.
Oh, okay.
And
yep.
My first thought was, hey, it would be cool if I just had two circles taped onto where the minute and the hour hand are, and then a meter like on the middle. And so the numbers would move and the meter would stay in the same place.
Right. Gotcha. That's actually pretty cool. Yeah. And
then I saw, let's see if I can switch to Skype. So I'll let you describe this.
All right. So what he's showing us, he's lifting his phone up to the camera, which is, for one, not very good for exposure.
No,
but
not very good. I want to say 5 or 6 circles moving around.
Yeah.
And the inner circle is the month and the outer circle is the second.
Right. Yeah, there's a bunch of circles. And so it looks like.
I was like, I could program something like that and then just get a crap ton of LEDs and just hook them all up to a piece of plywood or something, paint it, and mount on the wall, and that'd be badass.
So at what point would you need an Arduino for this process? Like, would you be programming that to...
Probably as the clock, and then also to run the dozens of LEDs,
so
I'm thinking.
What is involved in... All right, we should probably rewind. What is an Arduino, and what do you need to know to get...
An Arduino is like a mini computer. It's very much just... It's a microcomputer that lets you do stuff like... program a clock or make a robot. Well, not really a robot, but it lets you do all sorts of things that are just above basic computing, like a NOT gate or a diode or something.
Right.
But are below the use of like having a whole computer hooked up to it. And it basically just runs like it has a startup sequence and then a loop. Mm-hmm. And so whatever you program within that loop, you can use an Arduino for, and you can save a bunch of money.
Oh, cool. So what would you need to get? How much is it? If you were to launch yourself into an Arduino cavern and go
I'm
down
still
that hole.
Searching.
Okay.
I'm still like, that's, I mean, like it's the book has helped me with it of like how I might go about this great journey.
Mm-hmm.
I think Arduino might be a bit overkill for making this clock.
I'd say so. From what you just said, I would just repurpose a mechanical clock, but okay.
But I don't want a mechanic. Like, it's, I can't use a mechanical clock. I'd use a digital clock at that.
No.
Just because I need something that sends out a signal to each second, each hour. And a clock won't work because I need hours, days, and months.
All right. You want to go all the way down.
After I figure out how I can make one strand finish and then light up the next one. Because I've done stuff like this with Minecraft with those digital clocks.
Right.
So that's like getting the seconds and the hours are going to be the first step.
Mm-hmm.
Getting it to recognize the difference between February's 28 days.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's hard.
That will be hard.
I have problems programming my normal analog watch to realize that it's February. Fucking piece of shit. God damn it.
After that, easy part of like seconds and hours, hard part of figuring out the months.
Yeah.
And then after the easy workaround for the leap year.
What's the easy workaround for the leap year? Finished.
And then I'll probably make a second one and send it to my parents or something.
Right.
Cool. Like, hey, it's an
early. Send one to me.
So that's what you've been doing? That's pretty cool.
I've been researching a lot of just games I want to play and games I need to play and all that and stuff I need to build.
Nice. Durin. Oh, actually, no, wait, Durin's lost. Nubarama.
Oh.
No,
hi.
Nubarama left.
How are you?
Left us. And he's like, oh, just ask Durin first. And then he came back.
Yeah.
So, Nubarama, what'd you do? Did you go to the bathroom?
No, I put some clothing into the dryer and more clothing into the laundry.
This is what you're doing in the middle of a podcast.
Yeah. What else would you do?
Hey, it's, can you remind me
when we usually record podcasts?
We record normally at 9 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday nights. Yep.
And when did we start recording this week?
9:30 on a Saturday night.
On a Saturday night. So,
p.m.
No. We usually record at 9:30. We just try to get started at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. So
we usually, like last week, recorded at like 10.
By those two statements, you've established that there's a schedule by which we run this little show. So it's not a surprise.
Like, I follow schedules.
I'm just saying, maybe he put the first load in before we all started.
Exactly, right.
Or maybe he knew,
if you leave it, out for too long, it starts like smelling a little bit. So you clearly don't know because you're not a Korean person. Like it's what? Like a lifelong dream for me to take over my dad's dry cleaners.
What?
And
wait. Okay,
you don't
understand. You have multiple dry cleaners?
Huh?
You said dad's dry cleaners.
My dad's dry cleaners.
What?
Like, is it a dry cleaning?
You call the store like the dry cleaners.
A store that specializes in doing. Because we don't have dry cleaners in Australia. Right. Oh, we do, but we just
do you really not?
No, we do, but they're just so infrequent. Like, the only like one per, maybe one per suburb. Max.
Oh, really? There's like one per block, maybe two per block.
Wait, so your dad is dry cleaning for? Or is this like a North Korean, a South Korean thing? Sorry.
It's that's racist to just associate all dry cleaners with Koreans.
Does he actually own a dry cleaning shop?
Yes, he does.
Is that what your dad does for a living?
Huh?
Is that what your dad does for a living?
Yeah.
Oh my god! I did not notice at all about Nubarama. I'm not sure if it explains anything about Nubarama.
Nubarama, the inside story.
Yeah, I don't know if it explains anything.
After escaping from prison camp 26,
it shows that I'm
to Canada on a life
fully
raft
racist.
And opens up a dry cleaner.
Because when Nubarama, when he was Korean, I immediately assumed that his dad was in like
your dad's a ninja, right? That's what he does for a living.
Go off.
Actually, samurai.
The Koreans I know in person, so that would be like.
Yeah, Koreans are samurais. I'm sorry.
Or.
Police officer? Really? That's pretty rare
police
here.
Police officer.
Generally,
or
Koreans. Like immigrants in Canada, like first generation immigrants. Computer store
owner.
Or Korean immigrants in Canada. Right. A convenience store or like dry cleaners or laundromat. It's generally like small businesses they run. Or like restaurants.
Wow.
Yeah. Why are we talking about this?
I find that really fascinating. Anyway.
Why is that fascinating?
Because I didn't know Korean people.
I just guarantee it.
Because you look like you're living in a house with walls and a roof.
Yeah, I live in a house.
So I didn't know
I was in a roof.
I didn't know a laundromat could pull in that kind of money. That's pretty good. You seem like you're relatively well off.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Sure.
Anyway.
Okay, outside of, like, my family's income, what else do you want to, like, try it?
I don't know. The fact that, like, you work as a civil servant now makes a lot more sense. Your dad sort of, like, did he push you to do that to make a difference?
Oh, no. No, this is more like... I guess I could complain about City Hall right now, but I'm going to refrain.
Are you still
now.
Working there?
Complain.
Oh, you're back at school.
Awful. It's awful. Well, no, it's not awful. Let's be honest. Like, it's interesting, but you know, dealing with senile old people and like angry, irrational people complaining about politics over the phone
is
like one of the worst experiences I've ever had.
Yeah, Noob, I can sympathize. Having worked as a legal, I was a court runner. Basically, I would go to the courts and do filings for the attorneys because they were too bleeding lazy or too they would procrastinate to the last minute, and so I'd have to smooth talk with the court clerks and all that. So I can sympathize.
You know what happens? You know what happens?
Stupid people are.
When it snows. When it snows, they call up their local city councilor's office and then start screaming at them, why isn't my front lawn cleared? Why is there snow on the road?
The mayor's front lawn is cleared.
Yeah. Wait,
they clear your lawns?
No, not lawn. I just meant to say like road in front of the...
Et cetera, et cetera. Gotcha. Right. Small PD complaints.
Apparently, this is how I learned, you know, city snow removal is a pretty fucking serious job. They gave me like... a huge thick binder on like city snow removal techniques and like scheduling. Right. So it's like, I got a call about like how snow's like how there's no snow removal in front of their home. And then basically what I got was like a giant binder on just how city snow removal works in Toronto. And it's just like these techniques of like it's a level one snow day or like a level four snow day. And there's like a variety of different situations and scenarios they have in the book.
That's
and
so
they
cool.
just describe in detail like what the protocol is, like where the snow removal and the salt spreaders go. And it's like ridiculous.
Wow.
And
yeah, that's not the case here.
They made me read it. The entire thing.
I have no idea how to comment on it. So, do you work with snow? Because you don't have to work with the snow people yourself. Snow people. The snow removalists yourself. Yes,
the snow people. The snow people in Canada.
I prefer to be called Yeti.
Just like people in the lost city of Atlanta have to.
So you don't have to work with the snow removalists yourself, do you?
Well, generally, it's like calling between 311, so like just general like city services, and just like going between the why the fuck am I talking about this?
So I've been like the best Scotch cast ever.
I've been playing Company of Heroes and Chivalry Medieval Warfare. So this weekend was a free weekend.
Assholes. Chivalry Medieval Warfare. Are they like hard to work with?
No.
City, generally the people, because the thing, their job is to just deal with people. It's like dealing with like uncomfortable people. So generally the people who I speak to over the phone with, like that are city staff, are like really nice and they tolerate a lot of problems. So yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that like back a short in Indiana when it would snow a bunch, mainly ice a bunch. One of my buddies worked like for a construction company.
Right.
And he like his company had the contract to take the plow, like the snow plows out, which you probably never even heard of the Cynic, but there are like mass vehicles, like dump trucks with like...
They're not like tractors, but for snow specifically.
Yeah. Massive vehicles designed solely to take out snow and ice.
I don't think I would have known that if not for Top Gear, to be honest.
He loved it because he got paid a ton of money but yeah, I'm not sure about people who complain about that. I don't know.
Because like it's a seasonal job, isn't it? One of those seasonal jobs? Like who...
Yeah.
What kind of person is a snow person? How does that work?
I don't know. That's, I don't deal with the people who actually do it. I just deal with the people who lies in between those two.
Right.
I mean, like it's all like contract work.
Yeah. In the summertime, they would make houses and whatnot, and in the wintertime, they would.
That's cool.
Because there's no way you're going to keep just like people for a seasonal job just like that, like specifically for cleaning snow for the entire year.
Yeah, you couldn't have just that.
No. They probably outsource it to like private firms.
What's that show about truckers who have to like drive through mountain passes?
Oh, in Canada or something?
Yeah, I think it's actually just called like Ice Road Truckers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to watch that at some point. Again, like these are things I just don't have.
History Channel. That's what the History Channel has been like deteriorating to. You know, in Canada, the History Channel got a lawsuit to the CRTC, which is like the Canadian Broadcasting thing, because they don't live up to the name of the History Channel because all the shows are like, what's that thing? Where it's like reality TV, like aliens. That's all there is on the History Channel. Aliens, like supernatural theories, or reality television.
You mean that guy with the crazy hair?
Yeah,
the crazy ancient movie. Aliens.
Oh, it's up on the Netflix feed, even though I'd never watched anything related to it. God. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, I only all I know about ancient aliens has purely been by osmosis.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Noob, like the Learning Channel doesn't really live up to its name anymore either.
No, that's
no, but like the thing, we don't have a Learning Channel or
yours TLC.
Yeah, but like at this point, like the Discovery Channel or. Other channel? National Geographic.
The Discovery Channel is pretty much the only channel you really need.
So for you guys, what were your favorite channels when you were growing up? For me, I was a fucking nerd. I really, really loved Discovery Channel. It was like my favorite channel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Discovery. Like I said, the only channel you ever need.
Yeah, it's great. Or National Geographic.
I liked the History Channel because it had like future weapons or whatever.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't future weapons.
Or like crime shit, like 1980s
right.
Real life crime investigation stuff. That
was or like unsolved mysteries from back then. Like, they go back and like try to solve now with DNA. Stuff.
What was that new?
I don't know. That's
like, what do you watch? Thurb. I was about to say Conrad.
I don't there are numerous games where I just like make my name Conrad Kirby. And it's like, screw it, it's the internet. Might run into somebody who actually knows me. That'd be awesome.
What? What is Thurb talking about?
Because I don't care.
This Conrad Kirby character.
Oh.
Not to mention, I have the last name of Kirby, which is awesome.
It is a pretty
cool. That is.
So many times I thank my parents for that. It's like, hey, did you know we're named after a fat Nintendo pink character? It's like, no. It's like, we are. It's awesome. Anyway.
Wait, so what were we talking about? Like, so Discovery Channel, Rewind.
TV shows. We're getting on TV shows. There isn't really a set. Like, I guess the Cartoon Network. But it's really – I liked sets of shows like Toonami or the WB Morning stuff. Like I loved Animaniacs and actually like
– oh, man, yeah.
I am lazily looking out. Like if I ever come across like the DVDs of those, I'm going to pick them up because like watching them again, like little clips, they were actually educational.
Yeah.
And I mainly remember them for being funny. It's like, no, that's all the countries of the world, all that. It's like in the
– Oh, yeah. I had that song memorized when I was a kid.
It's awesome. And like it's Toonami on Cartoon Network I loved. I liked watching the History Channel for like weird World War II stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right? So like as a kid, they were surprisingly more interesting than they are to me now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when I was like sad. Six.
Like now, yeah. Like because for me,
I would rather read a book.
I no longer have pay TV at all. And I haven't had it for quite a few years. But ABC, Australian. I've watched
TV at least a decade. Occasionally, yeah.
Man, we're going to have to use our personal recording system because Skype's being really bad about it. Anyway, I'll turn off my video. Okay.
I'll be exported, unlike other people who forgot last week.
Yeah, so for me, the Australian broadcaster in ABC, I forgot what the C stands for in ABC. That's kind of sad.
Company or
company?
Corporation?
Anyway, they sometimes have, what's his face, like proper documentaries on their, like, primetime slots. That's the only time I'd ever watch documentaries nowadays. And even
wait,
then...
is the ABC government subsidized for you?
Ooh, yes,
highly.
This is interesting. For America, it's American Broadcasting Company.
Okay.
For Australia, it's Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
Corporation!
Right. Awesome. Yeah, BBC and CBC also are like...
A corporation?
Yeah.
And is BBC Corporation as well?
I believe so.
Why are we talking about this?
Well, all right. I thought they were all...
So, rewind. You were going to segue from Snow
this
People.
This is the most sideways fucking podcast ever.
Wait, right. Video games I play.
Video games video you play. Games. All right.
We're just riding this whole thing on two wheels.
Right. No.
We don't know if we're going to flip it, but we're going still.
Right. So, today probably is the day I played the most games. I played Chivalry Medieval Warfare, which is like a first-person medieval competitive FPS.
Not who's the person who asked me to play Chivalry like yesterday? It's
first-person melee. That was me just telling you that you should play it.
You guys may or know this, but is Chivalry the game that the TGS, the game station, did a bunch of like playthroughs with all their like fan base and whatnot?
I have no idea, but probably.
Like,
oh, yes, it was. They had a whole tournament.
Yeah. Okay, then yes, that game. That looks like a good game.
That game is great.
It's pretty fun. Especially
by the time the podcast goes out, it won't be anymore, but it's on sale.
No, it won't. Yeah, it was on sale. Right. So I played it with like all of the Gaming Hub people. So it was just a server. In fact, one of the people on the Gaming Hub who usually runs all of our servers, basically because it was a free weekend, every single server on the server browser was full, right? So no one could get into a server. So he decides to, on the spot, just buy a server for $25. So yeah, now Giant Bomb has a Chivalry server.
Cool.
Great. I recall correctly, it's still passworded because you decided maybe people on Giant Bomb might not be the people everyone wants to play with. But you know,
I find that PC Gaming Hub, I don't know if I agree with that, because I that's pretty cool. I'd like the people in Giant Bomb.
Yeah, I like most people on Giant Bomb. Some, maybe most.
God damn it.
Regardless, yeah, I played Chivalry. It's really fun. There's a lot of friendly fire, some on purpose. Oh, let's be honest. All of it was on purpose. Like, just killing dudes at spawn.
Because why would you not use a pole arm? And with pole arm, why would you not
use it? Is the giant mace as overpowered as, like, I saw in those playthroughs?
I don't think there's really an overpowered weapon, to be honest.
I prefer sword and board, personally.
Which is why I think, which is a large reason of why I don't like Chivalry. So, I've done a couple of months of German longsword and a couple of days of what's his face, quarterstaff. We just call it stick. So quarterstaff, German longsword, Polish saber, some very very limited sword and buckler, single sword, double sword. So I've done quite a few medieval weapons, at least touched on a bunch of them. But most of the time I spent with German longsword. To be perfectly honest, that there is a serious pecking order in terms of medieval stuff, which just doesn't translate to gameplay. So
obviously, because you obviously can't have that sort of
you have to balance life.
Exactly. Like the number one weapon in terms of like melee handheld weapon that was invented was the billhook, which is just a fucking stave with a like two blades at the end, one at an angle, one forward. Yeah, and that's it. That's essentially all you need. And that was like the top weapon in all of medieval warfare in terms of like survivability and how easy it is to kill your enemy. And
which is actually funny, because in the event of an apocalypse, a zombie apocalypse, that's what I try and make.
Yeah, exactly.
Not knowing that's what it was called.
I just take a crowbar.
Well, no, you want the reach.
You want reach.
You do want the reach. But I'd say probably because one of the crazy things about a billhook and how spears work in general is that they enforce a spacing between you and your enemy by fear, and zombies don't feel fear. So, like, if you have a spear, a zombie could very well impale himself on the spear and still continue towards you, whereas a person wouldn't do that. So I'd say in a zombie apocalypse, you probably want a greatsword or a battle axe, something like that. Something with a lot of
weapons. Like, be a gun?
No, because you've run out of ammo. You need two weapons.
I don't want to go too much on this. You got to use old-fashioned
get stuff. Unlimited weapon hack, and then you're good to go.
I don't want to go too much on this, but isn't, like, a billhook a very long stick and like lightweight like axe?
No. Okay, I'm looking it up now. Because it's a lot from memory. It's a lot like the I think it was called the G, which is
All right. I'm thinking something else. Zombie apocalypse. Probably
No. The billhook is apparently a huge range of stuff. The one I'm specifically
it looks more like a linoleum cutter.
The one I'm talking about is this, which is a. Let me see if I can get an image of this.
This is
great for the podcast.
They look like a long pole.
I didn't want to spend too much time on this.
With a hooked axe.
There's a green background in the picture.
A long pole with a hooked axe at the end and a spike at the top.
So not a billhook.
Billhooks are a wide variety of things.
So this looks more like a halberd or like a long axe. Yeah.
Well, the term for it is a compound weapon. So in this case, the compound like comes compound. From a pole, a cutting surface, a hook, and a spear. That's why it's a compound. It's a four times compounded. It's a fucking amazing weapon, but it's useless against zombies.
Good to know.
It's a long enough reach you could use it just lob off their head.
But you get really tired.
Okay, granted.
You get really tired, and it's only got a very short cutting surface, which is useful against a person who can stay at distance, but a zombie who'd be trying to get up close probably wouldn't.
A repeating crossbow would be nice.
No, again, oh, well, yeah, arrows are good, and bolts are good because you can reclaim the ammo.
Especially if they're repeating.
That'd be nice. Well, just because you want to be cool.
Yeah.
Jackass.
So anyway, going back on to off topic, and I played a lot of Company of Heroes today, and cool. I had a good time doing my Panther Rush and ruining everyone's day. It's very fun. So much fun. We should all play Company of Heroes together, especially you, Therb.
I'm never considering that.
I don't own that, actually.
Oh, what?
There you go.
You guys are... Jesus
Christ. It's a good game.
It's a really good game.
It's
a decent game.
Right. Anyway.
I played it at one point.
Named THQ.
Moving on to Duran, who's probably played some games that came out recently.
But Company of Heroes came out like at least in the last 5 years.
Duran. What you been playing?
I've played some games. Like Therb, I have played some Guild Wars. I've been messing around with some alts. So I got my wisdom teeth pulled this last week. That was fun. And not really too
told
painful.
You.
Did you have the weird sensation? I assume, did they like numb you or did they knock you out?
They knocked me out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they knocked me out too.
But like that entire first day, I basically spent in bed taking what was essentially Vicodin. Mm-hmm. As often as I possibly could, and then immediately falling back to sleep again.
Yeah, so I didn't have that luxury because you have to, you want to eat something every time you take Vicodin, and I couldn't eat something.
Hell no.
Ignored that piece of
advice. I went back to sleep.
They said eat with the thing, so I ended up eating.
Yeah, I literally sat up in bed, took the pill, and then went back to sleep again.
That was the day I bought a copy of Crysis, and then I think that's the reason I have such a bad experience playing Crysis, because I was playing it with like a really terrible fucking headache. I'm like, this game's shit. I can't believe it's going to 98 on PC Gamer. This is terrible. And I was just playing it half awake and with a terrible headache. Well, no.
Crysis is not a very good game anyway.
Oh, what? Okay, I haven't played it. My friends swear by it.
Later, come on, your bad argument comes later, Sinek. Continue, Duran.
I was taking two at a time, so I was literally like taking it and immediately going back to sleep again. So that was my entire Tuesday.
So it sounds like his method of just completely disregarding clinical dosages worked better.
Saved him from pain. Worked probably.
Worked way better. No,
that's the thing, actually, is... It said, they okayed me to take one or two according to the pain I was feeling. So I took two at a time.
Nice.
Every 6 hours.
I'm just happy you're still alive.
Me too. Congratulations. So now I'm down to just taking one every time it starts to hurt.
Okay. So I think I win. But if people haven't been paying attention to the last couple podcasts, which I don't blame you about, to be honest. Last week we talked about Wisdom Teeth versus fucking Hot Chili. I think I win. I'm going to put this out there. Hot chili wins.
Well, we've not. None of us have had hot chili.
I actually had to stop taking the two at a time, mostly because when I was taking two at a time, I couldn't eat.
Right.
Because taking them would make me anytime I did eat something, I would immediately feel nauseous and have
power shakes and stuff, or
I was doing juices. Jello. That was it.
Right. So couldn't you boil it down to a liquid, a coconut water and stuff like that? Or
I probably could and should have, but it was.
I've just never understood the limitate. Like people complain about the limitation of no physical food, the solid foods. I could totally live off non-solid foods for 3 days. I could do that.
Oh God, no!
3 days.
Oh no! Yeah. By day, I guess three, because. I have a hard time counting that first day as a day because I slept the entire time, but I guess it was one of the days. Mm-hmm. So by day three, I was already eating mac and cheese because I needed to eat something solid. Nice.
Because you slept the entire first day.
Yeah, exactly.
That wasn't the proof of mac and cheese. So
basically, the next couple of days, I had a lot of time on my hands because I couldn't really do much of anything. So I did play a lot of games. Like I said, I played a couple of alts in Guild Wars 2. I've messed around with my engineer a little bit.
Where are you at with engineer now?
Not
people
very
still
high.
Play those
like 15, maybe.
No, as in 11. Like your response to it as a class.
Oh. Actually, it's not. It doesn't seem terrible. Mm-hmm. He's currently going rifle.
Right. Yeah, I don't think you can make a good enough like review of a class until level 15. 30.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like I've heard it kind of opens up around like 20 to 30.
Well, that's when you get your ultimate too.
Right. Well, your
elite. Elite.
Yeah. Well, and especially with engineer, like it's really hard until you at least have all of your utility slots,
right?
Because those really do make up the engineer.
Doubly important.
One of the kits.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems fun so far. I struggled with one of the early missions in the human story,
mm-hmm.
Which was dumb and nearly caused me to delete the character, but. Moved on from him to my warrior El Fuego, mm-hmm. and started leveling him. And I think that might some of my time is going to be going towards.
I love warrior.
But aside from Guild Wars 2,
yeah,
I played some Darksiders 2 recently.
So where are you at with Darksiders 2? Where have you gotten to?
Well, okay, so I started it out. I had played about 20 minutes of it, and that was right before my power supply croaked.
Right. So you did the first boss fight, the cool one.
Basically, yeah.
So Shinboy really liked that boss fight. I found it like I was like,
I don't even remember it, honestly.
You fight a returning character.
I don't remember that at all.
Okay.
Anyway, so now I played like you know a good solid few hours of it, and I think I've gotten through like the first two dungeons.
Have you gotten? Should I stop outside the fire? The fire temple place.
Okay, see, I finished that one.
Okay.
I wasn't too keen on the game that first day I played it,
mm-hmm.
But after coming back to it and spending some solid time into it,
right.
that's actually a really good game. Like, I cannot wait to continue playing it.
What made me love it was, have you... Because I really, really liked it. It's just that immediately after that, I had something else to play, and then eventually Persona 4 came out, and that was essentially the rest of my life. Did you do the thing where there's a big ass guy in like the first of that of the makers or whatever that little mm-hmm. town? There's a big ass guy near some like poles in the ground, and if you talk to him, you can fight him.
Yeah, I haven't tried fighting him. Right. I've basically just been using him to train in new abilities.
Okay, so when you talk to him,
so you've been using him for target practice.
when you talk to him and he tells you he wants to fight you. And he goes, well, he makes fun of you. He says, like, you're a piece of shit. I'm a badass warrior. And let me tell you, it took me about an hour and a half to try and kill him. It was because you can't die. Like, if you get low on health, I think if he hits you once, anytime hits you, you immediately go very low health. And he says, all right, I've already won this fight. So, you legitimately have to be perfect on your dodges for the entire duration of the fight. Each fight would take me about 2 minutes. I think it took me about 30 to 40 tries to take him down. But after you do that, there's like he's actually related to a bunch of these monsters throughout the world in that part of the game. And one of them is like underground in one of these story dungeons, like the first story dungeon you do, the one with like water at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the water at the bottom, there's a secret room, secret pathway. It takes you to this like little opening area, and there's a monster that comes out of the ground that looks like he's made of dirt and leaves. So that fight and fighting him made me love that game because the combat in that game is very good. It's not God of War good, I don't think.
It's better than God of War. I feel like
God of War 1 felt sharper to me, but
I don't know. To me, this feels sharper. Like The dodges feel like there's God of War had a delay to the dodge. This
maybe.
Doesn't have.
I might be looking at God of War through very rose painted tinted glasses because I was like
yeah like the problem God of War had was when it came to like the dodging, mm-hmm. there was a bit too much animation priority
right.
compared to something like this.
Yeah, here
so you had to kind of account for that.
It cancels so yeah. well. Dodging cancels so
yeah.
well.
Yeah, the fact that like that's actually like a huge thing I think like the fact that there is a fucking dodge cancel. In this game, like, makes it so good.
And you need to use it. Use it for difficult boss fights. It's fucking great. Yeah.
But yeah, like, that combined with... so that first time I played it, I think my computer must have been in the process of... I mean, it was clearly in the process of dying because mm-hmm. it died shortly after I closed the game down. But the game was acting real weird. Like, the animations, specifically the traversal animations, were real bad.
Okay.
And I just assumed that was the game. And right. So that was one thing I was kind of telling Shin. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really a big fan of, and, yep. and the game just kind of felt clunky to me. Mm-hmm. After playing it this last time, that's not been the case at all. So,
oh, weird. Okay.
It's actually been very smooth. Like, the animations
have you changed
are
any of your hardware? Or, like, other than your
Just supply? Just the power supply.
That's weird. It shouldn't affect it, though.
But yeah, anyway, I don't know. It was weird. But... Yeah, like that combined with the loot lust is so good. Like the loot drops and like the fact that it's kind of a simple thing, but it's right. something I love when non-Diablo games do is the fact that when you get those pieces of loot, it actually changes the look of your character.
Oh yeah, that was totally surprised. Hugely surprised when I saw that the first time, because this is a character action game. Like, the character's look is usually so tied to the character action game that they never change it. No matter what loot you have, you barely ever change the physical appearance. Like, if you look at Prince of Persia 1, I'm talking about the remake of Prince of Persia, not the fucking 16-bit. Anyway, Pop 1, Sands of Time, your character changes throughout that game in really interesting ways, like his clothes rip and whatever, but that's got nothing to do with your loot or what sword you got. Like, you'll see the new sword. But this, them seriously going, yeah, you can legitimately change the way your character looks by just equipping
them. Like, you have some new shoulders, and yeah, you got new shoulders now. They look different. Like, it's cool.
My problem with the loot system was, at least in the first opening hours of the game, heavy weapons are significantly more powerful than your light weapons.
They are, but I mean, at the same time, with the fast pace of that combat, like, you're sacrificing a lot of...
But here's the thing, right? I don't want to ruin this game for you, but if you open your combo with a light weapon, your heavy weapons should sped up from there on. So if you go light, heavy, 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 it's the best combo, at least at the start of that game, and you just fucking destroy everything. Because he comes out so fast.
I suppose. Light. I don't know. I think they did a good job of balancing even that, because there are attacks that enemies will do that you'll see them do, like they'll like shine gold for a second.
Yeah.
And that means that they are going to be unblockable.
Yeah, and they're gonna whoop
you have to dodge out of the way.
I
think those are a good counter to slow weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. That game. Yeah, there's so much about that game to like. We were talking about this before the podcast. I wanted that game to start with the end of 1.
And when
I found out, I think a large component of why I didn't continue playing it is that I found out at some point that I heard that whatever was to do with 1 is late in the game, but you were telling me before the podcast Shinbo was telling me before the podcast that it's not even much of the game.
Like, the ending to this game takes place before the ending to the first one.
Yeah, which is not what I wanted.
The events of this game are actually like concurrent to the events of the first game.
Yeah, it's not very good for a podcast, but Thurb communicates a lot with his face.
I just want to make sure. I almost feel bad asking this, but we're talking about Darksiders 2, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole thing is like, I missed what game they're talking about. I swear I've played this before.
Yeah, Dad. It was a good game. Anyway, yeah, that's a good point. Totally whole game. What have you been playing?
I have played a little bit of the SimCity beta, but I can't talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Moving on.
Did you get banned for not reporting the bug?
What?
I didn't even see a report bug button. I need to look again.
That's weird.
Basically, in the user, or what is it called?
Can we talk about this?
LA, what does it stand for?
Really, no. The only thing you can really talk about with this beta is the fact that you're in it.
Right.
Well, we can talk about
totally streaming it right now.
I don't think we can talk about the EULA, can we?
No. Yeah, we can.
Talk about the old EULA.
On the EULA, basically, it said that if you don't report a bug in the game, you could be banned from every EA thing. Your Origin account could be banned. So basically, every EA game you play online and own.
But the operative words there are could be. And I doubt that's maximum infringement.
Yeah, if you didn't report it, they had the power to get rid of all the games that you own on your Origin account.
They're not
account.
Going right. to.
But they're like, no, that's a mess up.
They reserve the power to.
Yeah.
Technically, they reserve the power to do that anyway.
So it's whatever.
And I believe they rewarded.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Like I said, I can't talk about that, but it's, yeah.
Two questions that you should have. Do you know how long the closed beta will be running?
It's only running through or until Monday, the 28th.
Okay.
So,
You also get to only play 1 hour per scenario, so you don't get too into the game. is what I've been hearing.
Yeah, basically.
Durin can neither confirm or deny that.
Yeah, it's that's public, like the 1 hour thing.
Is that how we're going to get around this? We're going to get Noob Rama to relay his second hand information and therefore talk about Sims? No.
Got this from other people on the game.
Well, and like
I said, I think the 1 hour thing is public. So
if they do offer more closed betas or even the open beta, is that for people who pre-order it get access to it? Because that's the case with this one going on right now at the time of this recording.
Sort of. You could have signed up for the beta. In fact, I got 2 beta invites, like literally minutes after I pre-ordered it from Amazon and got my beta key and was like installing it. I got another email from Max saying, "Hey, you got into the beta. Here's your code." And I'm just like, great, thanks. I already have one. So yeah, that is the case with this one. But you could have also just signed up for it as well. But I don't know about future because this, like, on Amazon's product page for it, it specifically called out this closed beta. So and the game's not that far off from release; it's like 2 months away. So. If they do another one, they might just tag that in there as well. But I could also see them probably maybe not even doing another one. Like I don't know. It's weird to have a beta for a game like this anyway.
Right.
So it's coming in March.
Yes.
Oh yeah, wow! March is going to be like a big month for games.
Yeah, it is. But anyway, that's all I'm going to talk about with that.
Noob Rama, yes. you said something about getting a physical copy. I didn't hear what you said. What'd you say?
Oh, I'm going to get a physical copy of the game.
Of SimCity?
Yeah.
So, what is... All right. When was the last time you guys bought a physical copy of a game? Aside from console games, because obviously, yeah, that's the
physical PC.
I bought The Secret World while it was on sale on Steam for full price at Best Buy, is what I did.
Really?
I did, and I gave you shit for that.
Yeah. I had a $100 gift card and I spent everything on it and I'm like, what can I use this on? And it's just like I didn't have anything else to buy, so I just bought The Secret World.
I bought Assassin's Creed 3 physical.
Really? Thermalton?
Yeah. Well, okay. The reason for that was I think it was cheaper, if I recall.
Okay. And I know you got Too Human in used $3.
Well, that's 360.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I got my copy of Too Human.
Thurlton, when was the last time you got a physical copy of a game? Non-console.
Halo. Oh, okay. Non-console, no. For PC, I've only gotten it online, yeah.
Mine was Effect 2.
Wow.
See, like I said, mine was Assassin's Creed 3. Before that, it was Need for Speed and Most Wanted.
Like, for me, before Saints Row, it was Empire Total War Special Forces Edition that I paid $90 for and released.
But see, like,
that was like 2008.
Need for Speed, though, I had a legitimate reason for buying the physical version, mm-hmm. and that is that I don't want to own digital games on Origin.
Oh, okay.
Right.
I want all my digital stuff to be on Steam. If I can't buy it on Steam, I want the physical version.
Do you think that... My main question is why? Because I think Origin
it probably doesn't matter. But one of the biggest reasons I feel like is because with Steam, like they've come out and said if this shit goes south real quick or something, like if we're not able to continue this service, we will release these games to you DRM free. You will have a copy of every game that you own.
Okay,
license.
Yeah, it's not promised in the EULA agreement whatsoever.
In Origin, there is no such promise.
No, okay. They've said that, but they can't, like, they haven't legally promised that ever.
Who's
no, they
Steam?
Because all they're doing Steam. Is they're giving you a license to that game. So Origin right, doesn't have to do that.
They never legally promised that they're going to guarantee you're going to get access to your game.
So Noob Rama is saying that Steam didn't. Yeah. They haven't legally done it.
Steam said they would do that, but they don't have the power to do that for all of the games.
Here's the thing is I have a lot more faith in Gabe Newell being good on his word with something like that than I do with...
Also, Valve's a private company, so it's a lot simpler for them.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
So, yeah.
I was just going to say, because Noob Rama, what's your reasoning for getting SimCity in?
Oh, I plan on getting like a physical like special edition, maybe with some
what's
sort
in
of
the special,
thing.
What is in the SimCity special edition?
I don't know. I was only looking at the Digital Deluxe Edition, but I feel like after getting fucked in the ass really hard by the Guild Wars 2 Digital Deluxe Edition, I feel like
again, I'd rather own something physical. It's not like they didn't tell you what was in it before you bought it.
That was the last physical copy game I got, was StarCraft 2.
Oh,
I got,
wow.
I got the collector's edition.
Yeah, for me. Totally. Right. Yeah, okay, totally. Yeah. Me too.
I bought it for the book.
Yeah, and Heart of the Swarm, I will have a physical as well, because I'm getting the collector's edition of that too. So, I mean, actually, I'll have physical of SimCity. But again, for the same reason, like it's an origin game, and I want a physical version of it.
I know it's weird.
I know.
Yeah.
But you know what? It's weird, but at least I'm not one of those people that is, oh, it's an origin game, therefore I'm not going to play it, even though I totally want to play that
game. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah.
What else?
So yeah, the other thing I've been playing is Ni No Kuni.
So this is why I wanted to talk to you. So we're going to sit around and ruminate about Ni No Kuni. Where do you want to start? Does anyone else know what this game is? Nubarama, do you know what this game is?
It's the Mark of the Ninja. Yeah, it's Ni No Kuni, Mark of the Ninja.
You know what this game is, right there?
I believe it's Wrath of the White Witch. Yes. Actually,
that's the American subtitle of it. Yeah, it's the Studio Ghibli or Ghibli or however you want to pronounce it.
I say Ghibli.
Yeah,
yeah, I did.
Yeah.
As the person who's closest to Studio 5 in Japan, I'll defer to you.
I guess by physical location on the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the JRPG that everyone's talking about because it's moment. Got yeah,
which
it's
is the, like the in and of itself is fucking crazy that there is a JRPG that everybody's talking about in 2013.
I love that.
Well, there's not too many games out right now. So
yeah. It is the January release. That yeah, and DMC yeah. Devil May Cry, which I insist on saying the entire name.
Absolutely.
That and DMC Devil May Cry are the two big releases of this month. So I guess that's kind of why. But I don't think that's the only reason why. I think that game.
No, definitely.
So it comes back to where you want to start, because we can talk about the looks of that game by itself.
Ask you where you want, like what do you want to know?
All right, let's get the big thing out of the way. Has everyone seen how this game looks? Because
it's awesome. it's like a JRPG.
So, Nubarama aside, me and Durin have had a discussion relatively recently about the Wii U and its graphical quality. And
it's like Japanimation,
asshole.
Japanimation.
I mean, like it very people much reminds me call of it that. Wind Waker, just with the cell shading of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell it's Studio Ghibli. I really like the running around in towns and just like the general cutscenes of it because they are Studio Ghibli. Mm-hmm. I can't get behind the whole Pokemon battling thing, but I'm not a fan of JRPGs.
Right. Fair.
I've never played a JRPG.
What?
Yeah.
Really? Well, you have.
All right.
Because, what's his face? The Love Plus counts as an RPG.
It's not a... No, but JRPG as in the classic.
Okay, in the classic.
And
sense.
No, I'm not playing a role. I'm playing myself. And she's my real-life girlfriend. Fuck you.
This isn't a JRPG in the classical sense. Even though a lot of people insist it is. Looking at the systems, no, it totally isn't. But we'll get to there.
Because when I think of JRPG, I think of a specific genre, not just RPGs made in Japan.
Right. And like I would
certain
say
qualities to JRPG.
This doesn't actually fit in that anymore.
This is like a JAATBRPG.
Well, that,
what does that mean?
It's
a Japanese action active time.
Yeah.
is that what ATB is? Active time?
Like, for example, would you call Pokemon itself a JRPG? Because I wouldn't.
I would say no because there's
not a whole lot of RPG with it.
Yeah. Right, there's no storytelling unless you're right.
That's
it's more
true.
Like just an action game.
But turn-based strategy game.
There's storytelling in the newer ones.
Let's not get into the newer ones.
Well,
Pokemon
I don't think
it's not good, but there's storytelling.
But because when I think of JRPG, I'm specifically thinking of like the Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasies, obviously, Dragon Quest. Like
Tales.
There's a specific type of battling. There's a specific type of movement. There's a specific type of character design. Design.
That's, you know, like, do you not consider the Tales series JRPG then?
I'd say because
Tales,
yeah, or whatever.
Because it's difficult because the modern ones I wouldn't, but the old ones, the
Tales series are totally JRPG.
Yeah, because they are like that's part of the genesis of what a JRPG was. Like Tales series was one of the main pillars of it. But the old ones I'd say were more like it. I think if I'm thinking about it correctly, I think that the movement type was in 2D in the old ones. You just moved forward and back.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this something about actually moving around in a 3D environment and hitting buttons and then activating in real time that distances itself from things like Final Fantasy for me? I wouldn't call it. I'd call the newer Tales of series not a traditional JRPG. I'd call it a.
Yeah, they're action JRPGs.
Yeah, action JRPG. It would be an action JRPG.
Sorry. Yeah. Wait, so something like Monster Hunter or a bit more closer to RPGs?
More closer to RPGs.
More close to RPGs because you still in Tales you get swept to a different screen for your battles, and that's like one of the tropes of a JRPG, like a classic JRPG. But in Monster Hunter you don't. From memory, it's just like open worldy. Anyway,
don't get us wrong. Monster Hunter probably is considered a JRPG. So anybody listening, don't, you know, rage like, oh my god, Monster Hunter is totally JRPG.
I think
like the RPGs into like there's the American ones, which are like Skyrim and whatnot, mm-hmm. that are the whole open world, what we would consider RPGs.
Yeah.
Then there's the JRPGs, which are like Final Fantasy or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's the strategy RPGs, which
like the European RPGs, like the Eastern European RPGs. I feel like they should, or like German RPGs.
Give me some examples, sir.
Gothic.
What?
Examples.
Gothic example.
Gothic
2.
Never heard of it.
Fuck.
Isn't Gothic kind of similar to
Oh my god.
Because I've heard the name, people? But I know it's a big game.
Well, noob. Isn't Gothic kind of a Western RPG, though?
It is a Western RPG, but I feel like even within Western RPGs, there's like a difference between.
Well, right. Same as there's a difference. Same as there's a difference in JRPGs. Like within it, there are.
Right.
Multiple different things that qualify
it. But I feel like there are certain RPGs like. Right, but
this is a Scotchcast. What are you talking about? This is exactly what we're here for.
Different games.
I'm looking at pictures of
like completely different games.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Right, and they're both RPGs.
Yeah, so I'd say that this is a JRPG. So you're right. This is the first time a JRPG has been in huge spotlight for a while, but it isn't a traditional JRPG. It's still an evolved
form. This is a JRPG-ass JRPG.
But it's not traditional.
It is traditional in every sense aside from
the combat system, the side quests.
The combat system is different. It's an evolution of JRPG combat systems.
It doesn't have random battles. It's not traditional. That's what I'm going to draw the line.
Saying that it doesn't have random battles does not make it not a JRPG. There are a ton of JRPGs.
Yeah,
he's saying it's not traditional.
I need a name for Final Fantasy VI, and I'm using
it's traditional. It's not a traditional Japanese role-playing game opposed to Japanese strategic role-playing game.
No, not even that. I'm going to be calling SNES era RPGs traditional, and pretty much all the tropes
what I would say is you can't really call Chrono Trigger a JRPG and not call this a JRPG.
Again, I'm using subsets here. JRPG and versus traditional. I need a name for it. You need to give me a name for what Final Fantasy VI is. And I'll use that, and this is not that.
Final Fantasy VI, I
call that a traditional JRPG, and Chrono Trigger not a traditional JRPG. It's a JRPG.
Chrono Trigger would be... Yeah, I mean, Chrono Trigger is it's kind of an action RPG before there were action RPGs.
Exactly. So I would say that that's still a JRPG. Like, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying it is not traditional in the way that like a what's a recent like a Lost Odyssey is a fucking traditional JRPG. It's not like
which
that.
One's one with like the booby mouse pads that I really wanted to get, but
it's all of them, isn't it?
Actually,
Airgest War.
Yeah.
Record of Airgest War.
What the fuck? Yeah. Anyway, I want to talk about the visuals because a couple of days ago, me and Duren had a discussion about this generation versus the next generation. And this is going to be something that comes up in the Scotchcast in the future, so we're not going to go too deep into it. But my statement was that I think that the Wii U is, if you take where the Wii U is now, the eventuality of where it can be in the future is the evolution path between where the PS3 started in terms of visual prowess and where the PS3 is now. That's how much you'll see in terms of evolution of how good the Wii U games will look over the next couple of years. In terms of, like, if you look at the character models and the texture quality of stuff now versus when the PS3 first came out, that's and how that, much that, better that is.
That type of jump.
Yeah, that kind of jump is what you're going to see in the Wii U going forward. And I think that's going to be significantly less than what you'll see moving to the next generation. But when I saw Ni No Kuni...
And I think you are fucking insane.
We'll see. We'll see. That's going to be GDC. It's going to be GDC. When I saw Ni No Kuni, I was like, yeah, but games can still look good. And I remember that games can still look fucking good. They can still look really good. Like,
well, and specifically, games can look really fucking impressive and not be going for photorealism.
Absolutely.
Like, I love seeing games like this come out that, like, push graphics in a different direction.
Yeah. If anyone is for some reason familiar with Studio Ghibli, it's animes, I guess, but not it's in the sharp hair.
Animation. It's animes, but the art is like it's campy looking and all that, but it's still good enough to like it's worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah, it's even the as only an adult,
I enjoy.
Even as an adult, you should watch some of these animes because like that and the stories are really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're looking for like an overarching, it's
freaking good.
Studio Ghibli, like, how would I say, recommendation from us. Yeah, you should definitely watch stuff done by Studio Ghibli. But specifically, it's not like Feathered Hair. It doesn't look like Final Fantasy. It looks very Western. If I had to be specific about it, it's like a weird meeting between,
like, something you'd see out of a children's playbook or storybook.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
drawing. Yeah, the very accurate. It's a kid's storybook.
It very much has, like, Studio Ghibli very much has its own style.
Yes.
When it comes to their animation.
Yeah, but in this case for the video game, so how the video game is split up is it's got actual animated sequences done by, I believe, Studio Ghibli artists.
Yes.
Sprinkled throughout the game, usually in short segments. Then there's if you watch the Giant Bomb Quick Look, you'll see this. In between those, there is a type of rendering they use for like cutscenes, and then there's the standard in the world stuff. So the Ghibli stuff aside, because obviously we all know that looks good. And apparently,
did Studio Ghibli make Spirited Away?
Yes, they made Spirited Away. Yeah. I have a folder. Right. I have all their stuff.
Kiki's Delivery Service,
House of the Castle, Ponyo,
My Neighbor Totoro.
Mm-hmm.
I may or may not have like 6 or 7 DVDs of theirs lying around.
I think my friend's favorite movie is Grave of the Fireflies. Was my friend's favorite movie off theirs. Yeah, no, there's a bunch of excellent movies.
Right.
You can use IMDb, Studio Ghibli.
Well, and just real quickly, like, what makes this so interesting, from you know the Studio Ghibli standpoint is, like, prior to this, Studio Ghibli, the head of the studio was like always very against doing anything related to video games.
Really?
The reason this happened is because he like stepped down, and like somebody else took over the company basically, and that new person was the one who made the decision to do this.
Oh, cool. I actually didn't know that. That's really interesting. So how that translates to the game, so you have the Studio Ghibli out of this stuff, and then you have cutscenes and in world play that are done by the developers. Like, this isn't developed by Studio Ghibli. This is done by a specific... I think it's Level 5, right?
Level 5, yeah.
Yeah. Who are obviously touted Japanese RPG makers. And they are essentially imitating Studio Ghibli's work in their in-world animations, obviously. But my reaction to that was, it looks fucking amazing. It's cel shaded. Like, how would you describe it? It's cel shaded, right?
Yeah, totally.
And it's on the PS3. It's a PS3 exclusive game. So for any of those interested, I apologies for those who don't own one. Unless I'm incorrect with that. It is PS3 exclusive, right?
Yeah, PS3 exclusive.
Yeah. But what it's pumping out of the PS3, Duren, you've actually played this game. What were your reactions to how this game looks?
You can get a pretty good appreciation for how it looks by watching the videos.
Mm-hmm.
But really that compression still doesn't quite get it there. Like it's still like kind of stunning the first time you actually see it on your television.
man.
Like, it just it looks so sharp.
It's
and
that
so
good. Good.
And
yeah,
it's I would say it's the closest that a video game has gotten to mimicking an animated art style, like an anime style. It's not there. Like, obviously, yeah. These are 3D models. They do look like 3D models.
Yeah.
Some of the lines don't really match up the way you'd expect them to. In
to be clear, like for another like 3D to 2D like flattening process. If you guys have seen Paper Man, I'm going to bring this up like once an episode from like here to the end of time. If you ever seen Paper Man, it's not Paper Man good. Like that's its own thing.
That's the new bar.
The Paper Man scale.
Is it Paper Man good or is it Paper Man bad?
Yeah. Like before it was Pixar and now it's Paper Man.
Specifically. It's not Paper Man good in terms of 2D. Like you can tell it's 3D.
Gets zero Paper Man out of five Paper Man.
But they do some like real small subtle things that help it like feel that much more like it's, you know, a Studio Ghibli production. Like just real basic things, like there was a waterfall that I saw and when I looked at it, they looped the animation in just a way that it looks like how, you know, in background stuff in anime is how they'll loop it over a course of like, you know, maybe five or six frames. And it just has that distinct anime look. Like they did that in game to give it that same look.
Like for me, again, it's little things. Like if you look at the Japan Quick Look, there's a part where he's walking through the cat village, and we'll get to like what the game's actually about in a bit. And there's a little. It sounds like so small, but there's a little part where he is walking across a little bridge, a stone bridge, towards an island. And the stone bridge kind of has like worn away, so it's like dips down a little bit before it gets to the island. So there's a little bit of water running over the stone bridge just before you get to the island. As you walk over that water, it puts ripples in the water, and those ripples look like anime ripples. It looked perfect. Like, it looked amazing. Yeah, like, at least from what I saw.
It's that like very deliberate reduction in frames of animation that they do to give it that look that really just like kind of sets this over like head and shoulders over any other game that has tried to mimic anime.
Yeah, like, it's so good that in a post like Wind Waker, Tales of Vesperia, Valkyria Chronicles World, we are still talking about how good this game looks. Even in comparison to those high watermarks.
Which, I mean, just going briefly on it, what are your thoughts on, like, what do you think Wind Waker's going to be improved on when they do the HD version of it
for
Wii U?
Do you guys see those images of what they put out in terms of what they think it's going to
look like? It looks really, really good. It's completely going away from the cel-shaded style, though. Like, it looks more water polygonal.
It looked like it had bloom on everything.
Well, yeah, the bloom was oh god, that was a little too high. But more so, like the way that they did the shading made everything look more three dimensional than Wind Waker. I think felt perhaps. I feel like it was ever intended to look.
Yeah, well, my reaction when I saw the Wind Waker stuff was I'm not too big of a Nintendo fan. I never played Wind Waker, but I'm familiar with its art style. Looking at it, I saw it has the Wind Waker color palette. But aside from that, it didn't look like it didn't have like the same feel of Wind Waker to me.
Yeah, I mean, it looks really, really good, and like some of those shots you can see, like clearly, like this is going to be a better looking game. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the things that they are doing to make it look better do detract a bit from the original Wind Waker art style, and kind of moves it, like I said, a little bit more like away from like good cel shaded.
Yeah.
And more towards, you know, a proper like 3D world.
Right. And in this case, it's like in terms of Ni No Kuni, when it's doing its shit right, I haven't seen it putting a foot wrong, but I assume that there has to be parts where the presentation drops a bit. But when it doesn't put its foot wrong, you could freeze frame any part of Ni No Kuni, like just like him walking through this like a dark English countryside street, and you can freeze frame that and you'd still get an impression of how amazing it looks and how close to anime it's getting. And it doesn't look overtly 3D. It looks like it's being flattened.
Yeah, totally. Well, and again, like talking about the real simple things they do, like one of the earlier parts of the game, like you start off in your bedroom. And before I walked out of the bedroom, I kind of looked around the details of the room and noticed like, this is, you know, this is a 3D game. This is a 3D polygonal game. Mm-hmm. But, and I don't know, I don't think this is the case for this area. I think that area genuinely is not 3D modeled. Okay. It actually looked like they had hand drawn the background.
Oh, wow.
Like you would see in the background of an anime where, like, you know, kind of the moving parts kind of pop. Yeah. And then the background is more of like a static background. Like, that's kind of what it looked like. But, like, you know, again, very high res, very high detail. But, again, like, just doing things like that to make it feel that much more like the source material.
Yeah. So going like back to our discussion, I'd say that if games, more games, like, if this is where the Wii U goes in the next year... if games start looking like this anywhere, if more games start looking this good in terms of 2D transitions from 3D, I'm happy with where games are now in overall industry terms. If you can eventually, because I've been on the Giant Bomb forums and we've been talking about Persona 5 because that's what I do. And people on there are now saying, hey, what if Persona 5 somehow, like, if they were able to capture actual anime in appearance.
If it looked like this.
Opposite thing is, what if it looked better than this? Could you imagine if it did look better than this? Considering it's coming out in, like, 3 to 4 years, probably. If it looked better than this, and it somehow did, like, do you think that the next generation is the one that'll capture anime? Noob? I want to hear Noob's perspective on this. Like, does he think it's possible?
Capture anime?
Do you think it's possible to do anime in real time?
See, the thing is, it's such a broad term, because if you look at anime, there's like different anime studios mm-hmm. doing different kinds of anime with different kinds of art styles.
Yeah.
I think certain art styles are definitely a lot more feasible to do in a video game world mm-hmm. where it's generally stuff that's a lot more artsy, like something that looks almost painted. Some studios have that sort of style. Right. I feel like it's a lot more feasible in the video game world since it's less sharp and mm-hmm. less focused, let's mm-hmm. say. So it's all dependent on...
Because you've seen the Naruto game.
No.
The games? No, I've heard they look fantastic.
Oh, the game. Well, but they look very much different from anime.
Yeah, they do.
Or the anime of Naruto.
They're trying to be 3D. You can see that too.
Right. They're trying to be 3D. They're trying to have it almost different kind of art style, mm-hmm. at least the background art. Mm-hmm. And whether or not they can, I don't think they should be. Are they really trying to mimic anime, or are they trying to do their own thing?
I feel like those games are kind of, those games are more of like an evolution of the DBZ games in terms of like yeah. the art style they're going for.
Right. The DBZ game has nothing to do with like the anime art style. It's just using the characters and the story and the gameplay. And that's actually a really good question.
Like, could
I don't
we
know
get
whether or not
suit?
They're even going for a meme.
Because I think we could get there. And if we do, I am incredibly excited about that.
But the thing is, when you have something like 3D models, it's mm-hmm. really hard to make that look 2D, because anime is 2D, and it's really hard to give that
yeah.
like
yeah.
2D sense. Like, it's hand-drawn frame by frame,
yeah.
because it's not. You can't do it. It's 3D. And having people even hand-draw backgrounds and stuff like that is extremely expensive and time-consuming.
Yeah.
So it just... Maybe when technology gets better, but I don't see anything like that in the generation.
Really?
Well, wow. See, actually, where my uncertainty comes in is not on the technology side. I don't think technology is necessarily what's holding
back. Well, not
back,
technology,
per
but
se.
Whether or not people are risking or not risking. But like,
I think what it comes down to is
worth it.
Well, I think what it comes down to is actually, like I said, I don't think technology needs to get better for us to be able to hit that. I think it technically is probably feasible with our current technology. I think it is just a matter of finding it.
Right? Yeah.
Like it's a matter of messing with the tech, messing with the rendering, messing with the models, like doing everything like to just find the method that works.
So
and like we're seeing steps going more and more towards that. Like I said, that's why I don't think it's a tech
Kuni.
Thing.
Just quickly. And so it's a new barometer, can click on it. So if you look at this image, right, I would say that aside from the low polyness of like some of the eyes specifically that I can see, that's fucking close. Like, the trees right. look wrong.
I actually have like one that can compare really close to. Just keep talking. Yeah. 1 second.
And if there's a technological hurdle, it is definitely the polygon count thing. Like that's that is a huge thing, because when you see, you know, things that should be rounded in an anime, mm-hmm. and clearly, you know, you see the polygons in this. Like it does break it.
Yeah,
definitely.
It does break it. Right. So I'm just saying, like, if we're looking at an image, I just Google search Ni No Kuni, and there's an image here of him riding on the dragon, which I believe is the aerial, like, the airship equivalent for this game. And at least the part with him on his dragon, that looks almost, like, fucking almost anime. The world itself below them doesn't look quite that good.
Really? It looks really three-dimensional, I think.
Him on his dragon?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway. I think it's close, but I'm wondering if you guys think it's possible that this generation could be the one that brings us real time anime.
Course, again, it's so broad on like to an extent maybe, but I don't think like when someone thinks of Japanimation, like they're not going to think of this. Because, well, I don't know. Because at the end of the day, like because it's a video game, mm-hmm. and the way video game technology works is it relies on models, 3D mm-hmm. rendering, and et cetera.
Yeah.
It's just completely different from how animation works in just general.
And I would say, like, you know, trying to say...
I think, you know how anime is... Or this is going to hit anime when anime becomes 3D. That's probably going to be where the meeting point is.
Well, I think trying to say, like...
Oh, no, dude, asked, it's like, already happening.
Is this generation, you know, going to be the one that gets us to you know... And you know, looking like anime, like I think that's a hard thing to really ask, because again, like I don't think it is a technological hurdle. I think it's more of
someone has to make
an artistic hurdle.
Find the
and so like it's not fossils. This generation that's going to do it, and so it's hard to say, like, is it going to happen this generation? It's like, well, I mean, maybe, but it has nothing to do with this generation. It has to do with that person finding the way to do it.
Yeah, and I this game more than any other has made me excited for that, because. If like, not Persona 5, but Persona 6, and it's always going to come back to this for me, looks like the cutscenes for Persona 4, I'd be pretty happy.
Persona 6 in 2025.
Yeah. I'm going to be around, man. I'm going to be there playing that game, hitting on those, hopefully, older than 16-year-old girls in-game. Mm-hmm.
Pedophile.
I really hope
Persona starts screwing over. And this game has a world map-ass world map. Like, you actually walk around from town to town. And
yeah.
God damn, it's nice to have a JRPG that has that.
It's one of the things I missed most about Final Fantasy X was the loss of that. Like, they moved to transition. Like, you never hit the world map. You looked at a map on your airship, and you clicked where you wanted to go, and you were there. It was
the first step towards linearity in JRPGs.
Yeah.
And that's not something anybody ever wanted.
Agreed. Anyways, let's talk about the gameplay. So the actual game itself.
Yeah.
Tell us about Ni No Kuni.
Oh God, I was hoping you would give me something to lead into. The first thing I want to address is actually Thurbleton's concern with the combat in terms of the Pokemon-esque nature.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, like, I myself have described it that way as well, even after having played it. But it's not really, like...
I mean, it's not Pokemon in the aspect of you go catch them all.
That's the thing. Like, they're all, like, deliberately placed. Like, you'll have them all by the end of the game from the way it sounds, or at least the majority of them. There's not a ton of them. But more so, like, what makes it not Pokemon is the combat. Like, it is not Pokemon combat. It's not, you're not going out and catching Pokemon. You're not grinding the Pokemon out. You're not, you know...
No, my issue with the Pokemon, and you might, like, please correct me if this is just a generic RPG thing, because, I mean, most of the RPGs I've played have an American one, so, like, Fallout, Skyrim, and all that, and I didn't get too deep into those, but the whole sun class beats night class beats moon class, and it's this whole paper, rock, scissors thing.
Right. Yes, that is definitely – there are, like, four different
– You don't like paper, rock, scissors? I actually kind of like paper, rock, scissors.
I mean, I like paper, rock, scissors, but it's like –
Wait, but stop. Specifically, in Australia, we say scissors, paper, rock. I need to say
rock, paper, scissors here.
Really?
Rock, scissors. Paper, scissors.
Yeah, so scissors, paper – so it's like – do you not like scissors, paper, rock?
Well, see, mm-hmm. it makes sense, though, Cynic, because everything's upside down in Australia.
Exactly.
it's just paper, rock, Korea, too, but here in the real world, it's rock, paper, scissors.
No, it's I kind of got burnt out on the whole Rochampeau, however you want to say it. That's another way to say it. It's also
I like it.
Anyway,
it's good.
When I played Dota, like not Dota 2, not League of Legends, Defense Against the Ancients, that like the Warcraft 3 mod,
All Stars.
It's like that was very much a rock, paper, scissors type game, not related to Pokemon, but it's like this hero will beat this hero hands down, or this build will beat that build.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was flexible to a degree where
no, it wasn't.
It's not like, no, but it's not like it's like, oh, you met this guy, you're screwed. You can still like, you know, avoid combat, stuff like that. It's not like so
you can delay the inevitable, but that's
yeah, you can delay.
Jumping back on RPGs, it's just that same trope of like, okay, now to beat this guy, I just have to carry this type of Pokemon, or I have to get this stuff. I have to bring the right tools I want.
You bring the psychic type to the fire gym, or the air type, I guess.
Rather than the Pokemon you have the most fun playing as, you had to bring the one that is the most effective as.
Well, okay, where this game kind of maybe doesn't fix that issue, but maybe addresses it, mm-hmm. is, and this is definitely one place where it, you know, huge departure from Pokemon, is that when you have one of your familiar summoned out in combat, they're on a timer. They're only allowed to be out there for X amount of time.
That's kind of cool.
And if that timer runs out and you don't call them back, they will be out of combat for a fairly lengthy bit of time, especially if it happens in a boss fight.
I got to pour one for THQ real fast because I need a new Sunkist.
I think like the bigger difference is, because have you guys seen the video for Pokemon X and Y?
Yes.
New Brahma?
I don't know what the fuck that is.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. Never played Pokemon in my
life.
Damn
it!
God damn it.
Who are we on this podcast with? What is this?
Like,
oh my god.
Someone gave me a DS and I played a little bit on it, but I've never owned a Pokemon game like in my life.
Who?
I've never owned a Nintendo console.
I kind of got burnt out on the Pokemon after I memorized all like the original 151 or whatever, okay. And then they added another 200. I'm like, screw this game, screw this franchise.
Pokemon X and Y is probably the most exciting Pokemon since Gold and Silver, I'd say.
Is that exciting, or is that?
To people who like people who still play the Pokemon games, it's pretty exciting. Like me,
yeah. This game is a game changer.
Yeah, this game. Well, okay. So I thought it would be a game changer, and I'm not convinced it's a game changer yet. But the main difference is Pokemon X and Y, it's transitioned to 3D. So you actually have a polygonal character instead of a sprite, and he runs around the world and he like jumps across like there's like platforming and like opening chests and stuff in Pokemon, which is like fucking crazy, even though I still probably prefer like a Pokemon Snap, like an open world Pokemon. I prefer an open world Pokemon. I guess
step in the right direction.
Yeah, considering there has been, what, 6 iterations of something, a Pokemon between now and Red, or whatever it is, and they're finally making the transition to 3D, maybe it's a bit slow on their part, but...
absolutely.
No, they're making great strides.
But when I saw that video for Pokemon, it opens up and he moves in 3D, and I'm like, holy shit, this is going to be a game changer. But then they show the battles, and they seem to be just the old battle system with the 3D coat of paint on it. That doesn't...
The way the attacks are done, like the combat mechanics themselves, yeah, they probably are largely unchanged.
Yeah, I had that problem with Stadium as well, because what I've always wanted was a Pokemon game where you can, like, you're literally controlling, like, it's like a fight, not a fighting game, but like a character action game.
Where, like an action RPG.
Well, when you go in, yeah, exactly. When you go into the combat, you're actually physically controlling the Pokemon. You can dodge with it or whatever, and use its skills.
So bringing this back to Ni No Kuni, I didn't know that that's what I wanted.
Right.
Until I played Ni No Kuni.
Right.
That is exactly what the fuck I want out of a Pokemon game.
Damn straight.
Because like when you summon your familiar out into combat, like you are in direct control of them. You run them around the combat area, mm-hmm. and. But at the same time, it's not an action RPG. Like, you still have, like, you have 4 moves.
It pauses when you're selecting your move, right?
It does not pause when you're selecting your move.
Oh, okay, cool.
When you select attack, it'll pause when you select an ability or an attack or whatever, it'll pause while you choose who you're going to attack.
Okay.
But it is in real time while you're scrolling through your different abilities you're going to use.
Oh wow, okay.
So that's why it's kind of hard to describe, because it is it's action, but it is still turn based. In terms of, maybe not turn based, but it's still turn-based. Like give a command and then they execute the command. You're not
right.
Choose not, attack and you're doing go over and do like five different swings.
The X button doesn't you do a grab and the A button doesn't make him jump. And,
Like I said, you choose the attack command and he will run up and do some swings and then you can choose another command. Right. It's not like you're going up and pressing X square to do a combo.
Yeah,
But again, going back to the timer based thing, so you'll pull a familiar out and they'll be out in combat for a while, but if that timer, you want to pull them back out of combat again before that timer reaches zero and then swap in. You know, another familiar or even yourself. So like your main character also does fight in the combat as well. He's actually basically a caster. And so it's an interesting mechanic, and like I'm still fairly early in the game. I'm only about maybe 4 hours in or so. But I already have three familiars, and I just recently did a boss fight having all three and as well as myself. And it does start to get kind of crazy. Like swapping between your familiars, making sure you don't run them out on their timer. You all also share a health pool, so like their health is your health,
right?
So you know, anytime any of them are getting low, it's you that's getting low. So you got to swap back to yourself and heal, or swap to something that has a capability of healing.
That's pretty
cool. And heal yourself back up again. So it's just frantic fighting, especially in the boss fights. The normal fights, like it. One or two enemies, you can probably take them out with one familiar. You're not going to really be swapping out much. But one thing I did find is the familiar you start out with, I'll generally start a fight with him because he's a little more tanky.
Right.
And so if there's like two or three enemies, I'll start off with him, have him take the majority of the damage, because then I won't take as much damage. And then once I get down to one enemy, I'll swap over to my second guy who takes a bit more damage but deals a lot more damage just to finish off the last one.
So, and I think one of the cool things here is, so he's been using the word familiars, like that's essentially the Pokemans of Ni No Kuni, but again, like, without the capturing mechanic. But what I love most about it, though, is if you look at Skylanders or Pokemon or Digimon or any of the various equivalents, the character design of the Pokemon themselves has never been really, like, since the first Pokemon, which was like groundbreaking. It's never really been like it's never really recaptured an interesting new looking dynamic. They've looked the same essentially for the past couple of years, and people cribbing off them, you can tell that they've been cribbing off them for the past couple of years. For Ni No Kuni, at least to me, they look unique. Like they actually look cool and new. At least like the first guy is the little dude with the sword, right? And the sword and shield.
Yeah,
he looks different. Like, I haven't seen anyone who looks like it, even though he's a little dude with sword and shield, he looks different to any other Pokemon.
He's reminiscent of Ponyo. If anyone has seen that,
I can sort of see that.
Yeah, and so like the, just sort that, of. Just the little difference of the Ghibli art style, at least making these things look a little bit different than what they used to look like.
Yeah, definitely.
I like that.
And where the Pokemon stuff comes in again, aside from, because I feel like a lot of people, when you hear the comparison to Pokemon, a lot of it is the collect them all thing, or you know, in Thurb's case, you know, the rock paper scissors stuff, which is there, but I feel like is helped a bit by the way the combat is handled, where you're forced to swap out, kind of on a fairly frequent basis, especially for longer fights. Where the Pokemon really does come in is each one can have it seems like 3 to 4 like active abilities they can choose from, so like attack. One of them has like an attack, defend, and then like two other abilities that I can actually control, like what abilities go in those slots.
Okay.
They can have 8 that they know of at a time. You can only have 4 in combat, but you can have 8 they know of at a time.
Right.
And they'll learn more as they level up. And it, once you've hit that 8 limit, you'll have to start forgetting abilities to learn new ones.
Right.
So that's definitely very Pokemon in nature.
So it's like a...
And they evolve. I forgot about that part too. They evolve.
I'm thinking of this as it's kind of like Final Fantasy VIII mixed with, mixed with Pokemon. It's like a bridge between those in terms of like you select what's on your skill bar, and but two things are fixed and everything else, But Pokemon.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
And the last thing I want to say about the combat system is, like I said, it's starting to get just a little bit complex now that I have, you know, I'm kind of being forced to swap between multiple familiars as well as myself to do the healing. And he has some other spells as well. He's got like a fire and ice spell or something.
Right.
but I'm also only controlling one familiar. I'm only controlling, you know, yeah. me, my character.
One character.
You eventually have three party members.
Yeah, that's what I'm
eventually
interested
in. You will have three familiars out at a time. Like, granted, you're only controlling one at a time, mm-hmm. but you can hot swap at any time to one of the other ones. So and I believe the question... they can even trade familiars as well. So you can kind of get a good combination of familiars going as you progress through the game.
And that's kind of the question I'll probably ask you maybe next week or whenever you've played a little bit more of this game. Because my worry for that is, so to be specific, to reiterate what you just said, you essentially will be having one person on field and two others, I believe, because you don't, do you have to worry about your actual party members themselves while they have the familiars
they're, up? They're basically AI control.
What I mean is, like, do they pull aggro, the party members themselves, or just their familiars?
No, only what's out on the battlefield pulls aggro.
Well, here's
everything else, as far as the battle's concerned, doesn't exist.
Here's right. two questions for you. Is you said, like, the health is based off you and your familiars.
Yeah.
Once you get more allies, are they added on to, like, the health just increases and still one giant health bar?
No. Each human will basically have their own health bar. So the familiars are basically like these things that are born from your heart. So like they kind of come from you or whatever. There's
Fuck
other ways.
Yeah,
they
can
be Godalo Studio Ghibli.
Fuck yeah.
So basically that's kind of where the health bar thing comes from, because they're kind of a part of you.
Uh-huh.
Like the familiars that you have all share a health pool with you.
So when your
other party
out,
member, all their familiars will share with them.
When you have a familiar out, can you get attacked or just your familiar?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like when it comes to the fights, whatever is out active in the battle, that's the only thing that enemies care about or see or whatever the case may be.
So when you have three party members, you won't have six things to deal with on the field. You only have
You'll have your familiar and then their two familiars that are out there doing their AI thing.
So it'll be
three things, but each of those things has a column of things you could swap out with. But there's still just three health bars.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Still just three health bars. Yeah. And there are tactics that you can set. I think it's fairly basic, but there are tactics you can set for those AI to do certain things so you're not having to micromanage quite as much.
That was the second half of the question. So in the Tales of series, the more recent ones, they've actually done a pretty good job of your party members being pretty good in terms of AI control. Not fantastic, but they're decent. Do you have any... Because you haven't had another character member yet, so you don't. Do you know yet?
No. Yeah.
Yes, news camera did move. Noob has moved, and there's now a closet, open closet behind him. Dude, why do you keep your closet open?
Huh? Oh, it's just closet. Well, just closet. In case, like, because I don't like.
I typed it so we wouldn't talk about it.
It's like, read and talk at the same time.
If the closet's open. Like, there's no one that's hiding in the closet. But if the closet's closed, then someone...
That can't be the actual reason you keep leaving the closet. Is that the actual reason?
Huh? No, the actual reason is that my dad opened up and got something from the closet, and I was supposed to close it, but I said, fuck it. So I didn't
close it. So he's dreamed of having a walk-in closet. This is the best he can do at this time.
I don't want to be crazy here.
I always wanted a closet friend. His name would be... Clausy... Clausy friend.
Fuck you.
God damn.
I'm sorry.
I don't want to be crazy here.
It's not my fault. It's fucking Derm's fault.
To this day, I don't know what sparked it, but whenever I walk up to my car and before I open the doors, I always check the backseat.
Oh,
I'm glad we're the only one then.
This day.
zombie checking, right? Checking for zombies.
No, I think it might have been.
So you're not driving and it's like, hello, Cynic.
It might have been.
Hello, Cynic. How are you doing today?
The movie with the people locked in a room and they have to cut their own limbs off.
Saw?
Saw. It might have been Saw. That started that for me. But ever since then, walk up to my car.
Wonderful movie franchise that's not flawed in
the
any
The first one was good. Walk up to my car, check the back. Because if Nubarama said, I leave my closets open because people might be in the closet. Sure. Whatever. I don't do that. But if you want to do it.
Well, to be fair, I can't make fun of you because I get scared really easily. Like, I could just be reading like a somewhat mystery kind of story, and I have trouble sleeping at night.
Yes. Anyway, what were we talking about? Nino Kuni.
We were talking about Nino Kuni combat. I haven't gotten far enough yet to see how AI it works in this game. Like I said, I've only gotten about 4 hours in. The game is kind of a slow burn. It's still
right?
Somewhat tutorializing to some extent, but from what I've heard, like it does very deliberately hand out features as you're playing through the game. Like 10 hours in, you're still going to be discovering new things in the game.
So do you like it? Features in the end, like just to round this out, do you like it?
I have not played a single player game for 4 or 5 hours straight in a very long time.
That's crazy.
I had to be up in the morning with my son, and I knew it was going to be some time between 8 and 9 in the morning. Mm-hmm. I still stayed up until 3 in the morning playing it.
Oh man, that's good, because I'm going to buy that game when I can afford it, which will probably be next month or so.
Yeah, it's if you're into JRPGs, it's an amazing game. It's probably the best JRPG I've had my hands on in a long time.
Right.
If you're not into JRPGs, maybe at least still check out some videos, because I've been hearing of people who don't typically play JRPGs still enjoying this game.
Right. Because it's, I think what Brad said about it made me, was the part that made me like it. And to be clear, I'll probably play this game, but from looking at the quick look, I'm not particularly interested in it, which is why I bought DMC first. Because a lot of the endearingness from this game comes from the voice acting, the plot, and it's like, pretty much all the Ghibliness, inverted commas. I'm going to use inverted commas. People have been told. Anyway, whatever. The Ghibliness about it is what draw people in. And for me, it's not working when I saw the videos of the coverage for this game. But aside from that, like that could very well be what draws others.
Well, I think seeing some of that stuff in context maybe makes it work out a bit better. Like you kind of see that. It's kind of like why you don't see a lot of RPG coverage at trade events from Giant Bomb. Like RPGs are not very compelling in a vertical slice.
Right.
Like there's a lot there to see.
So Brad said, I think his terms was it wears its heart in its sleeve. That's how I'm going to paraphrase what he said. The game is very like it's not tongue in cheek. It's very truthful.
Your character is very innocent.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it's equivalent to a Ghibli movie. Like if you watch those movies, like you never get they're not like poking fun at the world or anything like that. It's all about like an emotional story. And if you're not in touch with the emotions, perhaps that's kind of the drawing line.
Well, even beyond
maybe it's time you need to be by watching a Studio Ghibli film.
Even beyond the emotional, the character says jeepers a lot.
He does say jeepers.
You have to be okay with
jeepers.
Like he's at one point actually says jeepers creepers.
Wow.
So yeah, he's very much an innocent little child.
Yeah.
But I think his companion character, Mr. Drippy, has gotten me. I'm going to start saying tidy a lot more often now.
Nice. That's awesome. Anyway. So
it's great. Yeah.
Moving on.
I will say this, and going into it real quickly before we move on. You talked about kind of like seeing things from a mile away in another game that kind of brought it down for you. I forgot which game you were talking about. Mm-hmm. But I will say, within the first maybe couple of hours.
Walking Dead. Walking Dead was the one where I saw things from a mile away. I called the plot points before they happened. And by the time they happened, I was just annoyed that they'd done what
okay,
I called.
Well, In this one, I think that one of the what's supposed to be one of the big reveals, probably later on in the game, you'd have to be incredibly dense to not call it.
Yeah, and
I mean, incredibly dense to not call it.
The other side of this, and this is not a spoiler because it happens, and it's on the back of the box. Apparently, the game starts with the kid who's the main character. His mother passes away. And if you're one of those people who wouldn't be, obviously you have to see it in context. But when I saw it, even like the small parts of it on Giant Bomb, I was like, oh, that totally. I got an emotional reaction just from seeing like 30 seconds to a minute of the footage surrounding her passing away, and I was already feeling it. So if you're a person who watches anime and never
you're
gets
a
like
a big baby,
the opposite. If you're a person
who
never
watches talk about on it.
Never gets that, sorry, just quickly, I need to
okay, go.
Vocalize yeah. this. If you're a person who watches anime or an equivalent animated film and doesn't get an immediate emotional reaction, you might not enjoy this that much. Yours.
I would disagree because I don't really, and I still enjoy it.
Oh, cool. Adding on to your point, Cynic, that we've sort of not talked about, and well, most animes, like the English version of it, is sort of like buh, something that Studio Ghibli does their very best at. And that is the same with this, the localization. The English version of it is extremely well done.
Yeah.
Oh, the localization is so good.
Yeah. That is something like it's most Japanese animes and JRPGs are sort of campy in the all your base are belong to us, the Japanese version of the English game. Yeah. It's very good.
Probably the reason I didn't bring that up personally was because, again, as everyone who's been listening to this may know, I've been playing a lot of Persona. And I would say that
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean I would say that Persona is probably the number one in terms of localization. So when I saw Ghibli, it was almost as good, and I think that's why I didn't bring it up because in my opinion, I think it's not still quite as good as the Persona.
Well, and I think Ghibli actually could probably be like or Ni no Kuni could probably actually be even better.
Mm-hmm.
If it weren't for the fact that I feel like there could be more voice acting, there is a right. lot of unspoken dialogue.
And
now granted, and this is, you know, kudos to the localization team is even in the unspoken dialogue, they still keep the localization very well done. Mr. Drippy's Welsh accent comes through
in the text. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I saw some of that on the quick look. I think for me it was more like the density of accents they use kind of rubs me the wrong way.
That was a little weird.
Definitely. It's like they don't not all the characters feel like they're coming from the same place. I know Drippy is supposed to be a Welsh, like a distinctive Welsh accent.
Yeah,
that's fine, but like even the British people just didn't seem like they came from the same town, even they're supposed to come from
then you had like the mother who had a British accent, but then the main character doesn't.
Entirely different accent, whatever it is.
Basically American, it sounded like.
Yeah, but all the actual actors are doing really fine jobs. That's the only reason why. Yeah. For me, I never brought up the localization because coming from Persona, that's the bar that everything else has to meet now. So.
Okay. Persona's the top.
Yeah.
And then just generic anime, video game or it's movie.
It's quite a bit down from there. And this is close to Persona.
1 through 10, what would you rate it?
I'd say this, Persona being 10, this would be an 8.
Okay. That's all I want to tack onto that was.
Right.
I mean, go ahead and. If Persona's a 10, then I would say that now are we talking about like localization in general or like voice?
I'd say voice would have to be it. Because then I think that the text from this is better than the text from Persona, text translation. But timing of the music in Persona. And your music timing has to line up with your English voice acting, which is very difficult to do for a localization team. But I think that the music timing from Persona supersedes that of Ni no Kuni, from what I've seen. It's just spot on in Persona. You'd say this is a 9 in terms of just the voice acting.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it's incredibly well done.
I see where you're coming from. Anyway, so moving on from Ni no Kuni. I knew that would be a big one. What's our timestamp at? Because we have a lot to talk about.
Like hour 45.
Yeah, that doesn't seem bad. Whatever. It's just a start. We're just starting. We're just starting for.
So, Duran, anything else you've been playing?
Let's see here. No.
All right, moving on.
Really moving on to news.
Ni no Kuni.
I'm playing Wake Up Club. That's what I've been playing.
Stuff has been happening this week in terms of news.
Yeah.
You know more
THQ
about the night.
THQ has been happening this week.
So we're going to talk about what? THQ, maybe some Nintendo, because we might not get to it. Nintendo.
Yeah.
And I think the rest isn't necessarily anything we need to talk about.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So the big ones are the sale of THQ, the dissolution of THQ by Bankruptcy's Court. And the second one would be Nintendo's, Nintendo Voice Direct or whatever it is, the presentation they did.
Yeah, basically what Nintendo has in store for 2013.
Right.
This is the new section, not the entire podcast.
Well,
I thought we were going to do most anticipated.
I don't know if we'd get there. Are we going to get to most anticipated games 2013?
I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I feel like the biggest thing will be the THQ, and then Nintendo. Right. I might sleep through it.
Want to go to Nintendo first? Because we can just get that out of the way. So I think the way they approach this in the Bumcast is how I would approach it as well. Or it might have been Weekend Confirmed, or whatever it was, from Shaq News. Nubarama, if you were to guess what games they announced in the Nintendo Voice Direct, whatever it was, Community Direct, or whatever the fuck, what would you think Nintendo they announced? Nintendo Direct.
Love Plus. Love Plus.
Okay, no. That's close, but yeah, oh. No.
Mario?
Yep.
Sonic?
No, that's Sega.
No.
We already partially said starts with a Z, ends in Elda.
All right, so we'll just get Delga. To it.
Yeah,
Durin. We'll get to it here.
Nibirama
so, sucks. Some of the stuff they announced, there will be a Wii U Zelda game coming, but they don't have any details on that right now.
Close to Love Plus. What is close to, this is close to Love Plus?
They're both Japanese games.
But in the meantime, they are doing, as we discussed a bit earlier in the show, they are doing an HD remake, I guess, of Wind Waker that's supposed to come out this fall.
Mm-hmm.
The side-by-side comparisons,
like where
again,
the big
like
bucks are HD remakes.
They totally are.
More money.
You know it's got to be if Nintendo's getting into it.
And you know what? Sure, because they're making a HD remake of Final Fantasy X for the Vita. I'm going to be all over that. Like, fucking all over that. And so,
to be honest, I actually like that they're doing, like, because what happened with the Wii proper, that is, there was, like, so much demand to get all the classic games, like the Mario, the Zelda, was there a Kirby game?
Epic Yarn, yeah.
Yeah. All those games out right off the bat, they sort of suffered in terms of quality. Like, nobody, like, Twilight Princess was okay, but it was, like...
Well, Twilight Princess is great. You shut your mouth.
Okay, but it wasn't, like...
What are you talking about? It was an 8.8, wasn't it? Didn't get a 9 during... 8.8,
man.
What's the best 9. Zelda game so far? We could roll off, like, Ocarina of Time or Wind Waker, but
none
not
of
really
them, I'd say. I'd say they're all pretty bad.
I've never played a Zelda game.
Anyway, I like how they did this, so they're giving us a Zelda game.
Darksiders,
right off the
best
bat.
Zelda game. There we go. Moving on.
Zelda is genuinely the game I've never
They're giving us one right off the bat to appease the fans, but then that still gives them time to work on an actual Zelda game for the Wii U.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's smart of them to choose Wind Waker as the one, because it was definitely, you know, maybe aside from Majora's Mask, it was probably the most underappreciated Zelda game. Right. I personally wasn't the biggest fan of it, but that had nothing to do with the art style, unlike what most people tend to think when I tell them I don't like it as much.
Mm-hmm.
It more so had to do with the lack of a world. But
right, okay.
I can still appreciate the game. The story was actually good. The callbacks to Ocarina of Time were actually... very well done.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, seeing an HD remake of that is really good. But I think what they're getting to is this means they're going to be able to spend proper time on a Wii U Zelda game.
Right.
And that's incredibly important because...
They will be able to make full use of the processing engine.
Well, because, like, looking at the Wii Zelda games, we had two. We had the Twilight Princess and we had Skyward Sword. And the problems with both those games was Twilight Princess was, you know, originally a GameCube game. So there were some issues. Like, it wasn't as good as a Wii Zelda game should have been.
Right.
And then with Skyward Sword, Wii Motion Plus being the big push for that, it kind of was more of a gimmick that kind of hindered the gameplay itself more than helped it.
So in this case, I think like the major things we can really talk about is the fact that they got up and said they realized they've taken into account the feedback they got from the latest Zelda game, for all it was called, Skyward Sword, and they are actually going to try and rethink the Zelda, the basics of Zelda for this next one coming up. But they're not giving us a release date; it's probably going to be years out. So there's no real.
Yeah, like they probably won't even be showing at E3. Yeah. So it's gonna be a ways out.
Yeah.
Moving on from Zelda though, there will be a new 3D Mario game coming from the Mario Galaxy team.
Yeah.
Which you know a lot of people are excited about.
So I'll Mario be excited check, when, Zelda check. Two Zeldas.
I'll be excited when and if I find out that it is not a Galaxy title.
Mm-hmm. I probably
if not, it is not a Galaxy title, I will probably be excited. If
and I will not. Galaxy but title, yeah, it's probably still. I bet it's not going to be a Galaxy title. They know.
I hope not. And then there, of course, you know, this is, you know, a new Nintendo system, so there will be a new Mario Kart.
Uh-huh.
So
two Zeldas, two Marios.
There'll be a new Wii. Well, Mario Kart is kind of everything.
It's kind of itself, yeah. Well, it's its own thing. It's got its own following. Well,
I guess it is about Mario. I guess it is just Mario characters. Yeah, eh, whatever. It'll be a new Wii Party. And then probably kind of the biggest surprise really out of this was that there's going to be a new... Yes, because there's going to be a new Yoshi game.
Oh, right. And I thought you were going to say the Smash Brothers game
since 1998.
Yoshi!
Whoa.
And it's being made by the
Epic Yarn. That was Thurbleton. Brought to you. Do that again.
That was actually really good.
Do that again.
Yoshi!
Okay. Interesting. Anyway.
I get a lot of free time in class. And I was like, what voices can I make?
It's going to be made by the Kirby's Epic Yarn team. And it is a Yarn Yoshi game. And Epic Yarn was maybe simple and easy and kind of slow, but it was an adorable game, and I can't wait for a Yoshi game.
I'm not a fan of Nintendo. Let's just put that out front. Move on.
Neither. Okay, I take that back. That was probably not the biggest surprise. Probably the biggest surprise that came out of it was the Shin Megami Tensei Cross Fire Emblem.
Okay, so when I saw this, since no, Shin Megami Tensei is the parent of what Persona was born from. And when I saw the video for this, and the first thing it shows is a bunch of Shin Megami Tensei characters, I almost had a heart attack because I was like, no way are they doing the next Shin Megami Tensei game as a Wii U exclusive, because then I'll have to buy one and then fucking playing the shit out of it. And then there was like, I know that kind of like transitions. I forget if there was an X first. I think there was an X. It was like the Shin Megami Tensei characters and an X. And I was like, what that all about is like a 10 because they're only up to 5 or whatever. And then it switches off. And there's like all these random like anime character looking dudes. And it's like Fire Emblem. And I was like, oh, thank God. I don't have to buy this game. that was my reaction.
Do we know exactly what kind of game it's going to be?
No, like, but we know it's going to be developed by the guys who make Fire Emblem, not Atlas and Shin Megami Tensei guys.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the bigger thing. Like, aside from the fact that Fire Emblem...
I imagine it'll be overseen by Atlas still.
Yeah.
I
mean,
they're not just going to let them crazy with it.
Yeah, it's going to get, like, probably, like, the A-OK for, like, some of the themes, maybe help with the themes. Because I'm not a huge thing... Like, I've never been a Fire Emblem kind of guy. Surprise, surprise.
Yes, I'm here.
It's just not that big an RPG. It's not an RPG in the league of not even a Golden Sun. I'd say Fire Emblem, even though it's older than Golden Sun, has been around for much longer. It never got to huge popularity.
Well, part of that is it's a tactic RPG,
right?
Is it? Fallout Tactics?
Are you sure? I thought the first couple were
this one looks like it is.
Is this? Did they show any gameplay? I thought they just showed the.
Well, I mean the most recent Fire Emblem.
Oh right,
okay. The 3DS one. Sorry,
right.
Sorry.
So it's not a big RPG franchise, but neither is Shin Megami Tensei. But obviously they're very different followings. And so the main thing was when I saw it, I was like, okay, if it's made by Shin Megami Tensei guys, I have to buy this. And if it's made by the Fire Emblem guys, I'll see how that goes. Luckily, they were specified that it was made by the Fire Emblem guys. So I'll see it. I'll see what happens with it. But
yeah,
we'll see.
It's interesting. It's definitely an interesting pairing.
It definitely got me excited. I think that the two things that are happening now, or one more than the other, is the HD Remix, which is obviously going to be a thing for the ongoing future. And I actually like that because the HD Remix have been pretty good so far.
They've gotten better.
Crossovers are now becoming a bigger thing, and I think of the crossovers currently announced that haven't been released in Eastern countries, Western countries, is Phoenix Wright versus Professor Layton, and that I'm totally interested in. That's for the 3DS, but that's not here nor there. Anyway, that's the one I want. I want that game now, but this isn't that. What else was announced?
So pretty much, I think there were a couple of other things maybe, but like the other big thing is Virtual Console is coming to the Wii U starting this spring. What's that?
Cheap Virtual Console.
Well, I mean, yes and no. Virtual Console is coming to the Wii U. There's going to be titles that are going to be available on there that, you know, for the prices you would expect.
Mm-hmm.
What you're calling cheap, what those are is if you already owned a game, let's say you already owned Mario 3
on your Wii. What? Wait,
yeah, yeah.
You're not telling me what I think you're going to tell me.
If you already own Mario 3 for your Wii, then you want
to. I don't have to pay for it, right? Because it'll just transfer over because I have a Nintendo account, and I just put that on my Wii U.
Yes and no.
Okay.
So you can transfer your Wii stuff over, including your Virtual Console stuff, already. Like, I have that on mine. All my stuff is transferred over. All
right.
You have to go into the Wii menu in order to access that stuff.
Sure.
Because it basically just emulates that through there.
Mm-hmm.
What this allows you to do is to have those games natively on the Wii U with all of the Wii U accoutrements that come along with that, like gamepad support, save states.
So what you're saying is to play Virtual Console games on the Wii U at the moment, you have to launch the Wii emulation mode and play it in there.
Yes.
But this allows you to play it outside of the Wii emulation mode.
Yeah, so basically, like, Virtual Console as a concept is coming into the Wii U in spring. Right. If you already owned some of those games, they will allow you for a pretty nominal fee.
I think it's like one buck or something like that.
It's like $1 for NES games, $1.25 or $1.50 for Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. So I imagine, like, Nintendo 64 being the most expensive ones, they were, I believe, $10 games originally. Like, for $2, right, I imagine will be their pricing for that. You'll be able to have that on your Wii U. The pricing, like, the fact that it's not free would maybe be an issue if it weren't for the fact that it comes with kind of those additional Wii U features, like the gamepad support, like the save state support, which is something that didn't exist in Virtual Console games in the past.
That's cool.
If this was like
$5, I would be...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Be in a rage because I don't own a Wii nor a Wii U, but I would be apologetic for the people
who still care. I own a fair number of Virtual Console titles, enough that I would be very upset if I had to pay like $5 per item to transfer them over.
Right.
If you own a Wii U right now, you can actually kind of preview how Virtual Console games will play on the Wii U by purchasing, I believe it's Balloon Fight, what I've been hearing.
Sure.
I'm not sure how exactly it works. I read an article, I think it was on IGN, that talked about it.
Uh-huh.
So maybe do some digging and find that out. But it's like 30 cents. So you can purchase the game and you can try it out and see, you know, how the stuff is going to work come the spring update.
Cool. I that's most of the Wii U stuff. I think highlight?
I should probably specify with those Virtual Console stuff coming in spring, a selection of NES and SNES games will be coming with that launch, with Game Boy Advance games being released later on.
So what is your highlight of this Wii U stuff?
For me personally, it was actually probably the one thing I didn't talk about. The one thing I didn't talk about, which is probably because it wasn't in this goddamn article that Alex wrote on Giant Bomb.
Yep.
It's actually the fact that Smash Brothers for the Wii and 3DS, there will be something shown at E3.
Right.
It's not going to be playable, which is what I thought.
I think I said that about the Mario as well. I think about Mario.
Mario will be playable. Mario Kart will be playable. I think the Wind Waker remake might be playable.
Okay.
I think those are the ones that they're going to have playable at E3. They've already, you know.
So what that's saying to us is, even though they're not really announcing it, that's saying it's probably going to be holiday releases this year for those.
Yeah.
All right. I came on here. The reason I wanted to talk about the Wii stuff is because I wanted to lament the fact that what the Wii is getting is fucking Mario and Zelda and Zelda Remake. But so many people have come onto the internet and sung that song. I don't have to make that argument because that's the general consensus, which is awesome.
Well, you have to also look at it, you know, as this is the Nintendo Direct. These are the games that Nintendo is bringing to the Wii U over the course of this year that we know of, at least.
Yeah. They showed us a little bit of Bayonetta 2 and stuff like that.
But obviously, we'll find out what third party support will be like come this E3.
If there's any third party support
for 2013.
Yes. just to be clear here, I'm not a huge fan of the Wii U, and Durin is a Wii U owner who thinks that he wants to wait and see. He's not going to write it off yet. Was that accurate to your stance on it, or would you say you're a fan of it?
Actually, I am absolutely a fan of the system, but not for the Nintendo fanboy reasons, like, oh my god, I can't wait to play every Mario and Zelda and blah blah blah. I'm a fan of it because the system has the potential to do some really neat things and already can do a lot of really neat things that I think are going to be kind of driving forces for the industry, whether or not this console is actually successful.
Okay. We'll see how that goes. That's definitely going to be something we discuss at GDC and at E3. Definitely. So I guess we can move on to the actual news topic of the week. The one that people actually give a shit about.
Yeah.
Also the biggest bummer of the week to some.
Yeah. So a lot. To a lot of people.
I don't care about THQ. Is that a faux pas to say?
You mean the headquarters?
The toy headquarters?
They had some really good studios and some very solid games, but a lot of their games would not be what I would maybe call mainstream games.
Well,
so I could easily see why somebody would say they weren't necessarily a big fan of, you know, their library.
THQ is a publishing house, and they own a bunch of developers, right? They owned a bunch of developers. It was the development teams I was a fan of. And the properties, to a large extent, that I was a fan of.
There was no brand loyalty to THQ whatsoever.
At all. I did not give a shit about THQ.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
So what this story has become for me is the lament for Vigil. But that's been essentially it. And to be honest, I don't give a shit about Vigil.
It's about that same, like, Vigil, but also Relic for me, because I really enjoyed the Company Heroes.
Relic has been saved. It's been put on Noah's Ark, is what happened to Relic. I am so pleased with what happened.
Before we get really into it, we should probably talk about what we're talking about. Anybody who's been living under a rock for the last week or so, last year, really, and doesn't know what's been going on with THQ, they've kind of been in a bad place, and they decided they were going to file for bankruptcy. Their initial plan was to try and sell the company wholesale to an investment house. In an attempt to basically save the company, keep it running, keep the games being produced, keep people in jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And their creditors didn't like that. They took it to court for it. The judge agreed, and they were required to dissolve the company. Right. So they had an auction on the 22nd of January to auction off the different IPs and studios to any interested parties, and a lot of those got scooped up. So I'll just go down the list real quick, and then we can kind of talk about the specific studios or acquisitions that we want to talk about. And I'll even go ahead and toss out the numbers that they were purchased for, just because it's easy and it's right here.
Do you have the numbers for second place? It's also nice to know like what the next bid were, because some of them are really interesting with second place.
I don't. I just have the main bids.
New Brahma, can you pull that up?
The Giant Bomb one?
Yeah.
I'm looking for it, but...
okay, well, I'll just go ahead and do these first.
No, first.
Yeah.
So the Homefront franchise... the Homefront IP was purchased by Crytek for $500,000, which is insanely low. But at the same time, it's
like an average person could probably
do a Kickstarter to try to buy that though.
Right.
Yeah, if that was an option, it could have been done. But let me just say,
if no one
would have invested in a Homefront Kickstarter.
And
I don't know. Vinny might have.
ironically.
I'll get back to that one in a minute. We'll be going down the list. Okay. So Relic was purchased by Sega for $26 million.
Yep.
The highest purchase price of all of the studios or IPs.
Hold comments to the end, New Barama.
So THQ Montreal, which is Patrice's studio, I believe.
So they've never put out they haven't put out a game, have they?
No, they have not put out a game yet. So they were sold to Ubisoft.
Right.
So he's going to be going back there.
Yep.
For $2.5 million.
Which continues to be a thing that everyone is giggling about in the background of Patrice Duarte going back to Ubisoft, even though he left Ubisoft.
Well, apparently I won't go really deep into this, but apparently there are reports that he may not go back.
Oh, no shit. That's the funny part because he had a pretty big break from Ubisoft, and the fact that he kind of got shoved back in their direction.
Well,
is
I don't know.
Hilarious.
I mean, the same thing happened with Jeff Green and EA.
Right.
And I mean, he took it in stride.
He took it in stride.
He's still there.
But Patrice doesn't seem he seems headstrong, which is a good thing for a designer. Yeah. Like he's an excellent. You need a jerk at the top. If you've been following how The Verge views politics in this industry nowadays, but I don't see
at
him
the same time. I hope he sticks around because fucking Assassin's Creed needs him.
I hope he's...
Have you beaten that yet? By the way,
no, I haven't.
Assassin's Creed 3?
I actually haven't gotten back to it yet.
Nice. Gotta beat that game.
So many games. Okay.
If he stays with that group, then I'm fine with him staying with.
Microsoft.
If he goes to Assassin's Creed, I'll lament his existence.
The next one is the South Park game.
The Stick of Truth or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Which looks really good, by the way, guys.
It does.
When I saw that, I was like, oh, that's still a thing.
RPG. That one was picked up by Ubisoft for $3.2 million. However, South Park Studio is currently trying to fight that to basically not allow them to purchase that and to hold the rights themselves.
Oh, cool. Right. Which would be good for you, I think.
Yeah. Evolve was purchased by Take-Two. Mm-hmm. I don't recall exactly what Evolve was.
Is a game that's being developed by Turtle Rock Studio, who did a lot of for Valve, so like Counter-Strike, Left 4 Dead, stuff like that.
That was purchased by Take-Two for $11 million, so apparently whatever the hell they're working on has got to be goddamn amazing for them to purchase them for $11 million.
Well, they purchased the studio, right?
No.
They purchased Evolve.
IP. Holy shit!
Just the IP.
Turtle Rock is not owned by THQ, if I recall correctly.
No. Yeah.
Oh right, they're independent.
So they purchased the publishing rights for $11 million. Right. So, like I said, whatever they have, amazing.
Might be.
And the second place bid for Evolve was $250,000 coming from Turtle Rock itself.
Oh, so New Brunswick's got second place. Just runs through the second.
Right.
Places.
So okay. So going from the top, Sega, the original bid for Relic was $26.6 million by Sega, right. And the second place bid was from the parent company for Bethesda, ZeniMax Media, who offered $26.3 million. This is from IGN, by the way.
Right.
So it was literally a $300,000 difference.
Yep.
That's like really close.
It's kind of cool.
I don't have the exact number because they don't have it here, but if I recall correctly, Volition was bought by Koch for $22.3 million, but the second place bid was by Activision for like $6
million.
Right. No bids for Visual. I don't know the second place for anything else. Yeah, that's about it.
Okay.
That's all the second place.
So the last one that we haven't covered was Metro, was also purchased by Koch Media, and that was for $5.8 million. And again, that's just for the publishing rights. The studio is not owned by THQ.
Right.
So yeah, coming out of this, like the big downer really is Vigil, because they were kind of the only other big studio that has a fairly recent title that just didn't get picked up.
Yeah.
Don't care. Never played Darksiders.
A lot of it, I think, really has to do with it. And one of their employees addressed this in a letter he wrote out that, you know, it's. In some ways, it kind of makes sense why they weren't picked up. It sucks. You know, they do make, you know, clearly they make quality games. However, a lot of these other studios that were picked up currently have things in the pipeline that are, you know, fairly close to release.
Right.
Whereas with them, they just put out Darksiders 2 last winter.
The people would have to, like,
we're still in the
winter. Let's make no illusions here. A lot of these prices are being these companies being purchased for a song. Like, these guys are getting sweet deals on a bunch of these. Like, for example, the South Park game for $3 million or whatever, that is a sweet deal. And I can tell that right
Home
now.
Front, $500,000, let's be honest, that's probably a sweet. That's best deal.
I wanted to come back to that because that actually was incredibly smart of Crytek to do that because they made the not-so-smart decision of developing Home Front 2 with THQ publishing it.
Right.
And so they already have all the work and everything done or, you know, in progress for Home Front 2. And rather than to have had all that money they've spent on this development just go to nothing by, you know, maybe nobody purchasing it or, you know, whatever the case may be. Because let's face it, probably not a lot of people were interested in Homefront 2.
I didn't even know it was a thing.
Wait, are we Homefront 2 or Homefront 3? Because there already been a Homefront 2, hasn't there?
No. There Homefront 2 is what they're working on.
Okay.
You're thinking
so purchasing it for $500,000, that's, you know, in terms of these studios, that's chump change. And that allows them to just self-publish the game or, you know, maybe even license it out to somebody else to do the publishing to basically get that game out there and try to get as much of a return on whatever they've made for that game thus far.
Yeah. So seeing some of the numbers on these parts. Which one were we talking about? The specific one? It was Darksiders. For the other ones, it makes sense because you're getting a studio, but you're also kind of buying all the hours they've put in into their current project as well. So you're getting a huge deal.
But
for Vigil,
Vigil was working on a project that apparently literally was jaw-dropping for the people that had seen it. Mm-hmm. However, it's going to be something that is so far off that you're kind of with them, you're buying potential, whereas with these studios, you're buying a product.
Yeah, exactly. So you'd have to purchase the company and the people, and then you'd have to fund the development of the product for multiple years before you get any return of investment, which is a good reason for why.
How long has Visual Games been around for?
Two games.
Yeah,
right, exactly. Yeah, so they've only done Darksiders. Like there was really a benchmark to compare what they
could do. Darksiders was good. But
neither of the games were really commercial successes. I mean, they did okay, but they weren't like games that you can look at and be like, okay, yeah, these guys have only made two games, but they made two really, really good games. Like Rocksteady, you know, they made some games prior to Batman Arkham Asylum, but if something happened and they needed to be purchased, you can bet your ass they are going to be purchased for a large sum of money because of the sales of their two Batman games alone. Unfortunately, with Vigil, they don't have that luxury. The sales for their most recent game, Darksiders 2, aren't even as high as they were anticipating. So it's unfortunate because they are they do put out quality products, but I mean when it comes down to it, it does it is finances, it is the numbers, and the numbers kind of didn't really fall in line for them.
Yeah,
too bad, so sad.
So the one thing that was also kind of up in the air for a lot of people is it
new bro, doesn't give a shit.
As long as Relic's alive.
The WWE license, it sounds like
God damn it,
might be being picked up by Take-Two.
Oh yeah, I thought it was going to be picked up by EA.
That's kind of what a lot of people were expecting because they do hold the MMA license. But it sounds like Take-Two is actually interested in that for whatever fucking reason. Who knows? So yeah,
God damn, so, I cannot believe those games are still being made. Whatever, anyway.
Of course they are. People buy them. Clearly.
So the thing about Relic going to Sega and Noob, you're
Nooborama,
saved.
You were excited about
it. By the way, Sega is now probably going to be one of the biggest real-time strategy what the fuck is it called? Not developers.
Publishers.
Producers.
RTS
makers. Publishers. In the world, which is crazy. Like, Sega, fucking biggest RTS publisher. Because now they have Total War, which they've done a really fantastic job with. They saved it from Activision. And now they're saving Relic from what's going to die of THQ. And I think it's really great decision.
My problem with it, where I worry about Relic, is that I agree there are definitely worse places they could have gone. I don't think ZeniMax would have been a worse place. I think it actually would have been a better place. Not because, maybe it was a better wheelhouse
The problem, Creative Assembly recently got the 40K license. So,
but no, it has nothing to do with that. The problem where I see with this, where I'm afraid for Relic, is Sega's not in a very good place financially right now.
Aren't they? I think Sega was willing to put down $26 million or so for anything, then they actually might be better off than you're giving them credit for.
Right.
Because they put out some pretty decent games like recently. I think they've had some huge bummers. I'm going to look up Sega and the Japan.
I mean, it's not even like they don't have real-time strategy games down the type. They have Rome 2 coming down the pipe, and really big.
They do. Like I said, that's why I'm saying it has nothing to do with what the studio brings to Sega or what Sega already has in their wheelhouse. It's straight financials, and Sega is not a very stable place for a.
I can't say anything because I have no idea on their actual financial state.
I'm looking up now because it doesn't seem like a move that a company that's worried about their financials would make. Let me have a look.
I feel like Koch Media.
That's the one I'm worried about.
That's the one. I don't think they have.
With Koch Media, this is their first acquisition.
Yeah.
This is their
to
first.
Be fair, yeah, yeah. And if they're like, Sierra, there's some big European conglomerate with probably endless sums of money, and just not Deep Silver that's the one with the money.
Well, yeah, Deep Silver is like, they're what they call their publishing arm, basically, of Koch Media,
Big conglomerate.
But like the what a lot of people were worried about with this is, you know, the most recent stuff going on with Dead Island and everything. But I don't think that's really going to be an issue for Saints Row. I think they kind of put it best on Giant Bomb when they were talking about it, in that, like, this is probably a really good place for Saints Row to have gone, because clearly at Deep Silver, they're not really getting their hands in what the developers are doing. They have a very hands-off approach.
If
Dead Island is any indication.
Right.
And that's exactly what Saints Row needs to be successful, like we saw from Saints Row the Third.
Indeed.
Now, as for Metro,
I think Metro
could've
been, like,
could have been better places, could have been worse places.
Deep Silver.
Yeah,
well, I mean, Deep Silver do know published Stalker, the Stalker games in Europe, so it's not like crazy Eastern European setting games aren't down. Deep Silver's out. Deep Silver published the Gothic games, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. They've published a lot of those kinds of games.
Wait, but is it, if anything, I think German?
Yes, it is. Deep Silver is also German.
So the only issue I'm having here, and I really hope this doesn't become a thing, but the German stance on violence in video games, do you think that would come into this at any point? Because I don't think so.
Like, the only thing that could potentially affect would be kind of similar to what's going on with Nintendo with their whole distribution in Europe with like the M-rated titles only being able to be looked at or whatever on their eShop after a certain hour. Like, that has to do with, like, distribution issues.
Right.
I don't think that's going to have any impact whatsoever on their game, a game that is being developed by a studio that they own in a different country.
I really hope not. That's the only, like, that is pretty much the one thing I would look at. Like, huh.
They also published Singles Flirt Up Your Life, one of the only 12 adult-rated games on the ESRB.
Well, the Germans are quite free with sex. Let's be clear here.
Yeah.
Aside from that, I don't want to cast any dispersions. We don't know how cock is going to... How do you say that?
I believe it's Coke.
Coke?
Okay. The popular consensus on the internet is Coke Media.
All right. So we don't know how Coke...
Mostly because I don't think anyone wants to say
regardless.
Coke. I just sticker because it's 13-year-old.
Holding it.
Wait, is it Heckler and Koch or Cock? Or is it Heckler and Coke? Because it's the same spelling.
I'd go with Coke.
Whatever. We'll see how Coke goes.
So I guess next up is Crytek purchasing Homefront 2. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Take Two purchasing Turtle Rock Studios. Do you guys know anything about
it?
All I know is
there's no word that they purchased Turtle Rock Studios. Only that they.
No, I'm talking about. I was gonna say Turtle Rock Studios Project Evolve.
Oh, okay. Again, like, I don't know that many people know much about what Evolve is, but that is a lot of money.
Turtle Rock Studio makes good games, man. What can I say? Left 4 Dead 2.
They must know something we don't, clearly, because $11 million just for the license. I mean, Metro was half of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we know Metro is a fucking good game.
So. Well, also, yeah. Metro was...
Well, Metro's not a big seller.
So, I mean, not that it's not like a seller. It's that 11... is like that's the game, plus they don't have to worry about that much more development time.
Right.
Because isn't the game right around the corner
for Metro?
It is. It was been in development for quite a bit, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Metro's coming out
this year, right?
March.
Yeah, or, like soon.
It's like, I think it's been like changed to like spring 2012 or early 2012 or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
it was coming out this year mainly because THQ is pushing them to try and get it out ASAP so they could like make money, but it's a game that's like... In the, you know, near completion, so they don't spend too much more on development with it. So I imagine that's what a big part of that like cost was from. It's like, yeah, we can throw some money for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I still like it's a good amount either way, because again, Metro is not like a big seller.
Right. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, it's going to be a definitely not.
No. They'll easily make their money back on it, basically.
I'm just looking up stuff at Turtle. Their image is adorable. Just a turtle. It's a fucking turtle.
So what else? South Park Stick of Truth.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. Like I said, the South Park company or whatever studio is fighting it. They're trying to hold the rights themselves or claim that they hold the rights or however it's going to work. But
$3.2 million. Pretty small, less than Metro.
Yeah. Yeah, it's.
Man,
I mean,
that's a good deal because South Park games don't necessarily sell too well. They sell okay,
but they've always
they also bad. Critically yeah. don't do well.
Yeah, they've never yeah. there's never been a franchise.
They just don't do well.
Well, there's only been like one, which was I think or, it was the Tower Defense game good. That was good. yeah. But this one actually looks really cool. Has a lot of positive buzz around it. I think this is probably.
Oh, they also bought THQ Montreal for $2.5 million.
When talking with friends and coworkers, that has come up when I talk to them. Like, hey, did you guys know THQ is going out of business? Like, oh yeah, I remember they made a few games or something. It's like then they would ask me like, isn't there a South Park game coming out? It's like, yeah,
yep. That's so. It's going to be hopefully if it's good, it's going to be huge because it looks hilarious. I haven't seen like that's something new. It's even though it's not a new IP. Specifically because it is South Park, I've never seen a JRPG-esque South Park equivalent ever. Like, just anything like that. This is actually a unique product I'm actually very interested in. So I think
so I'm glad that in terms of like the world itself and what they're having to do with that game and the complexity of it, I'm glad that complexity is fairly simple, it seems like.
Yeah.
Because the one worry I have for that game is kind of why everyone is super interested in it, and that is that Obsidian is making it.
Yep.
Who are not necessarily known for making super stable games.
Yeah. Spotty at best.
Don't buy it on the PS3, maybe?
Yeah, don't buy it on the PS3. But yeah, it's like if they get the humor down, that's all that game needs. It could be a generic RPG.
All the writing is being done by Trey and Matt.
So
they are doing all the writing for the game and voices and all that.
Probably one of the best humorous RPGs made, which is kind of
just realized it's going to be a South Park game without Chef. That's unfortunate.
Way to bum me out. Anyway.
And they also bought the THQ Montreal for $2.5 million.
So
yeah,
Ubisoft Montreal, THQ Montreal, big Montreal, Montreal, Montreal.
We'll see what they put out. I actually have no idea how much Patrice actually did for Assassin's Creed. Some people hang that entire series on his head, and mainly because I suspect that I did go downhill once he left. So people kind of look to that as the big person who left, and therefore this is why the thing went down, and therefore kind of inferred how amazing he is, inverted commas, I'm going to say that again, as a designer. We'll see. He's just yet to prove himself outside of that franchise to me that I know of. Unless there's like a huge database of what he's done in the past. But Patrice Duarte. Anyway, yeah, that's essentially all I have to say about that. Sure. Why not?
Yeah, I think definitely Relic got the best deal since Sega is apparently doing really well according to Wikipedia. They're doing significantly better than Electronic Arts, if that means anything.
I would actually argue maybe Volition probably the best deal out of all of this.
I disagree. I disagree because Sega is actually a very experienced publisher. I don't know any big Western titles that Deep Silver has actually publish here in North America other than Dead Island was not that big.
It was bigger than they expected it to be.
Controversy for Dead Island has been
it's big. Definitely not Saints Row.
No, I agree. And also you have to remember too that this is the first development studio that Koch Media has acquired. This is their first in-house development studio.
Exactly.
So I mean it'll be interesting, but I think the reason I feel like why they got the best deal is they will most likely get to do exactly what they want with no publisher interaction.
The thing is, when you look at games like the thing about Sega is because they own Creative Assembly, and we already know that Creative Assembly is doing really well. It's still making PC games because it only makes PC games. And the fact that they're allowing stuff like that means good things for Relic. And the fact that they've acquired the Warhammer franchise and everything, I feel like it's lining up perfectly, working together.
The reason why I would worry about Sega more than I would worry about Coke is because I feel like with Sega, there is the potential if Relic doesn't pump out some big games kind of out of the gate that they will be either dissolved or
have they done that? Is that something Sega moved
into other studios? That's something big video game publishers do.
That's true.
When studios don't produce. They either shut the studio down or they kind of merge their teams into other teams.
Sega's always struck me as a pretty Japanese developer in that they kind of perhaps take loyalty to a fault. I haven't seen, because I've never heard of people being angry with how Sega has treated them. It's always people like Microsoft or Ubisoft.
Well, that's why I say I worry more about that with them than I do with Coke.
Okay.
I don't think that if Saints Row 4 comes out and isn't, you know, Saints Row 3 again, I don't think Coke's going to shut them down. I think they would at least, you know, they're going to give them some goes. Yeah. They're going to, again, that is their one development studio. That is what they have. So
that means we have no idea what direction it's going to go. Like, we have no example of what Coke, or not Coke Media, but Deep Silver does as a publisher, especially if it's now like their first in-house development studio. Like, I just don't know what would happen to the franchise. It's not like an experience. Well, that's the thing. Again, publishing,
like, we can see based on what the publisher has done with Dead Island, like, the game is going to be exactly what Volition wants it to be. Like, they're not going to be going in and altering things to make the game more sellable. They don't do that, as we've seen.
Anyway, so we're going around in circles here. I just wanted to say that, like, Patrice Duarte apparently worked on Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots, which is my second favorite game of all time, tied with Metal Gear Solid 1. That's interesting. I don't know what he did in that game. I don't think he was head designer. So, again, he's unproven to me. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, so anything else? Any particular thing? Because I think the most interesting thing about this group of people is that none of us particularly cares about THQ as a company. I don't know. No. A lot of people have out of it.
I was sad to see this happen to them, because I felt like they were one of the few publishers out there willing to take some fucking chances and let people make some video game ass video games.
Right. But I like, not to say that I like that they're closing down, but I like how, at least how I see the video game landscape changing. It appears to me that publishers as a thing are becoming less and less important. It's kind of diverging. Video games are going down, self-publishing becoming a bigger thing, and large publishers like conglomerating and eating up as many developers as they can. That's like the two directions video games are kind of heading down at the moment. So it's interesting that I think this is just like a casualty of the future of video games, which is going to be a couple of companies, some of the standstills, like EA, Activision, and Ubisoft. Those are going to be like the three big ones in the future. Whether EA survives that long, I don't know. They might be purchased or whatever. But and the other side is going to be independent development. I like how slowly and more frequently game developers are insisting on keeping the rights to their IPs. Stuff like this is kind of like, this is kind of evolving the industry. This is part of this is the growing pains of the industry. This kind of needed to happen and will happen to more publishers.
Well, and this happens every console generation switch. Yeah. Like, every time you move on to the next console cycle, like, you're going to have, there are developers that will go under. Mm-hmm. That, you know, again, this is something they talked about in Giant Bomb. You know, Midway was one of the big ones from the last generation.
Yeah.
It seems like this time it feels even stronger this time than it has in the past, partly because these studios are doing everything, or these publishers are doing everything they can to try and hold on, and just try and hold out for those new consoles. And I feel like, had those consoles come out last year, like they probably should have,
that's a very good
THQ point. Would have most likely been in a much, much better place, and this probably would have never happened.
It's kind of scary how long this generation has gone. In that, I worry for the next one.
Doesn't live up to expectation.
Yeah, I'm. Honestly, really, really hoping that the architectures start converging.
This is why you should be a PC gamer.
I feel like that's part of the reason why I worry about your expectations for the next generation, because I feel like
my expectations are firmly in the graphical fidelity part of it, and I think they'll be met.
Right. What I mean by that is, I feel like because this console cycle has gone on as long as it has, mm-hmm. expectations for the next console cycle are going to be higher than they've ever been. And I think that for a lot of people, and I think yourself included, it's going to be a major disappointment, because I think that it's not going to bring what a lot of people are expecting the next generation of consoles to bring.
We'll see. I'm having, for me, the only thing that I'm basing my opinions off is hopefully it'll look something like things will look close to what they will in the Watch Dogs demo and the 1313 demo. If they don't, then that will be a disappointment. If they're not even close. If they're nowhere close to that, if they just look like modern games but with better AA and slightly higher res textures, I will be pissed. But I don't think that's what we're going to get. I don't think we're going to get better than that. Anyway. But it,
Relic gets best deal.
I'm still waiting on The Last Guardian to come out on PlayStation.
God. God damn.
That's vaporware. It's such a, such a sad piece of vaporware. So sad. Because it was so interesting. But we did get good shit this generation. I'm not going to complain about this generation at all. Especially with especially even now, just this fucking week, Ni No Kuni came out, this generation paved the way for that game coming out. So, you know, that's it. You guys want to wrap this up? Or you're going to do, because we're at 2.5 hours or so.
Yeah, I do want to pose one quick question, just kind of mostly out of just my own morbid curiosity.
Yep.
We want to take bets on how much longer John Riccitiello will have a job at EA.
Isn't he on the way? Hasn't been rumored for ages that he's on the way out?
Right.
Well, it was basically he kind of rode the entire company and his job on Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Right.
I believe to the extent that if the game was not a success, there was an agreement that they were going to be rid of him. I want to say I read that somewhere.
There was a lot surrounding his tenuous grip on that company.
Yeah.
From various directions of attack, but I my bet is actually I think he's managed to stay in charge for the opening of this console generation, the coming one, and if they do well out of the gate, he'll be fine.
No, I think they'll replace him regardless.
I don't think we're gonna go into 2014 with Riccitiello at the top of EA.
I would actually kind of agree with you, because part of me is saying, what's some examples of the top brass leaving a company, and what kind of announcements have you had leading up to that?
Just to point out, in the last year, EA's stock value has dropped by half, or it's lost more than half its value.
Yeah.
If you were an investor, would you want him to stay for the next year?
Again, I feel like I've read something somewhere where they are clamoring to have him removed.
So, according to how Consumers Magazine,
EA was the worst company of America.
I think Phil Harrison left Sony on a drop of a dime. He suddenly left. He left Atari, I believe it was, in equivalent manner. The guy who was head of Microsoft, Peter something, I think it was. No, maybe not Peter something.
Peter Moore.
Peter Moore. He left at a drop of a dime as well. So maybe you're right. Maybe there will be no slow build up to his eventual decline in overall media.
I feel like the difference between Sony and Microsoft and EA is Sony and Microsoft have upper echelons of the company. The video game division of Sony and Microsoft is not the end all be all.
Right.
The CEO of EA has no boss to report to other than the investors.
Mm-hmm. The investors are kind of the bosses he's
right.
They choose whether he has a job or not.
Maybe you guys are totally right. He could possibly just not make it to the. Do you think he'd leave before the consoles come out or after?
I think if they're going to get rid of him, it will be before the consoles come out. I think that they will want. They want a fresh face in there for the next generation.
Exactly. Like the guy who gets on stage at E3, I don't think he will last that long. If he's leaving before this console generation starts, he's not going to make it to E3.
He might.
He might.
I don't think that I really do feel like they're clamoring to get rid of him in terms of the investors. Mm-hmm. He might still be around for E3, but I would not expect him to be around for the launch of console sites.
What's coming down the pipe for EA? Like what games?
Dead Space 3?
Yeah, there's no reason.
Yeah, because there's so much hype building up. God, I feel so sorry for the Dead Space franchise. God damn it.
I don't, because you know what? It was... It was during that time with Mirror's Edge where they were taking chances on newer games.
Uh-huh.
The first one was a really good game, didn't really sell very well. EA gave them another shot and allowed them to make Dante's Inferno,
mm-hmm.
which was a fucking terrible game. But that was mostly because of EA's fault, because they rushed them. So then they gave him another shot to go back to Dead Space and make, you know, make a proper sequel to it and try to get those numbers that they're, you know, they want out of an EA game. Didn't get those numbers, and they're still allowing them to make a third game.
But Dead Space 2 was fucking, like, I think, what, like, 7 developers in the end or something? Like, a shitload of developers working on the game in the end. It was a turmoiled development process. It did not go well from the start. I don't think they've had... I'm not sure how much of it is EA, but either way, I don't think the Dead Space guys have had free reign of what they're doing. It doesn't look like it. They have not been given developmental freedom, maybe how they should have been. That's why I'm kind of sad of it, because I think if they were left entirely alone to their own devices, like how the guys are doing for Bioshock, that they probably would have done a better job with the continuum.
Well, that's what happens when you're public.
Because that's going to turn out so well for Bioshock.
One game that a lot of people is coming like out what for EA.
Putting out, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't care.
Is SimCity.
Is what that EA?
That's Maxis. Right. It's owned by Electronic Arts.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That is an Origin game.
I went through the list and like Battlefield, Mass Effect. Wait, SimCity. The Sims.
Yeah,
well, I guess so.
Well, The Sims is their breadwinner.
I guess they are releasing a winner this year then. Yeah.
Yay.
And Dead Space.
Is a PC only game going to be a real winner?
Wait, no, hang on. They have the expansion to Star Wars The Old Republic coming out.
Oh, great.
How much do you think SimCity will sell?
I think it will sell big.
I don't 2 or 3 million.
It's going to be a large game.
I think it will be like 1.5 to 2 million.
No, there's no way it's only going to be 1.5.
Part of the reason why I think that it's going to be a big seller is
nostalgia.
Retailers are also expecting it to be a big seller. Amazon, if you pre-order through them, they are giving you a $20 credit for pre-ordering.
Wow. Okay.
They haven't done that in a long time.
Putting their bucks behind... Because how much does XCOM sell? I think it has the same clout as XCOM does. In a lot of ways.
No, way more than XCOM. No,
way more
than XCOM. All right.
It's
a lot more mainstream than XCOM.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me just see how much.
I mean, and think about this. This is the first SimCity they've made in years. Right. I believe the first one they've made since they started the Sims franchise. Like they made SimCity 4 around the time I think that Sims came out, or shortly before, and they have not made another one since. And they've just been pumping out Sims.
In the very first week, Sims 3 sold 1.4 million copies. I'm sure it can easily pass the 2 million mark.
Sims 3.
Yeah, wouldn't.
I wonder how much The Sims will affect SimCity sales. It might be
oh, not 0%.
Because yeah, The Sims is what really sells a lot. Like, if no. they, that, like yes, no, the Sims so. Is what has so. Been
yeah,
keeping
yes, yeah, you're right.
afloat.
No. That's not true. Think Sims is what's keeping EA afloat?
No,
what?
But it's part of it. It's one of their biggest breadwinners.
That is a leaky boat, if that's what you said.
That is a very...
one of the biggest breadwinners. People
if,
love
If you Sims. Think EA is keeping itself alive by Sims 3 Katy Perry DLCs, you are terribly misinformed.
No, not unique. But no, sorry, not only The Sims, but it's part of it. That Sims does sell a lot.
It is a big franchise for them,
yeah,
definitely.
It's a huge franchise for them. So I wonder how much of that will affect it. Maybe it will affect it. Maybe people who like The Sims will like SimCity or be marketed to with SimCity.
Maybe to some extent, but I think they're different groups.
Yeah. Well, we know they are. I'm just wondering if they will know that they are not the same people as us.
Sims are fucking boring.
Anyway, is that it? I don't think we have the time to go into the most anticipated games for 2020.
Yeah, no, I think that's a show.
That's a discussion for a future podcast.
Yay. And with that, thank you for listening.
Antichamber's coming out next week. Everyone should buy it.
Plugs.
To the Scotch cast. Do you have any plugs?
Yes, everyone should buy Antichamber.
That's the crazy non-Euclidean geometry video game thing. All right.
Yeah.
You get that, probably get that on Steam.
Yeah, which is weird because it's not on Steam yet.
Yeah, you're talking to me about
it's
this.
It's worrying me.
Yeah, apparently it hasn't shown up on Steam yet, even though it's supposed to release on Steam next week or so.
On the 31st, yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. Noobarama. Are there anything else, Duren? You streaming or some shit?
Yeah. When I can pull myself away from Ni No Kuni, I will definitely stream some stuff.
Cool.
This coming week. I will do it.
Thurbleton?
I mean, like, I am starting to stream again. I do this thing called Manic Mondays, where every Monday I just try to play something and stream it. I guess it's a way for me to try and play new games, but lately I've just been playing, I've been streaming Hawken, and I've streamed some Guild Wars.
Yeah, I tried that too, Thurb. I tried using the Steam Roulette to force myself to play some of the games that I own, and yeah, it doesn't work. You find the one that you want to play, and that's just what you're going to play.
Yeah, because it's fun. I don't know. Yeah. I might use it to start playing Blacklight in a couple weeks, but yeah, play some old THQ game or something.
Cool.
Yeah.
New Brahma?
Plugging the PC Gaming Hub, Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub. Come play Company of Heroes 4v4, 3v3 with the Giant Bomb dudes. Chivalry, basically any game that's on PC, we play. We've recently been playing, going back to old games, like Rainbow Six 3, some SWAT 4, really interesting tactical stuff. If you're into playing games on the PC, we'll accept you as long as you're not like a weirdo who plays like anime games or something.
Because that role has already been filled.
Yeah.
New Realm is a soul.
That's my shtick.
Yeah, that's his thing. For me, I would plug... I've been reading... I didn't actually say what I was going to, what I did this week at the start of the show. I read 14. It's just called 14. I can look up.
The sequel to 13.
I'll look up the... Let's see if I can find it. But yeah, so it is a book, and if which is kind of like a mystery book. It's set in modern day, like today modern day. People walk around with iPads and stuff. It is not a detective novel. It's like if you were a normal dude and asked to solve a crazy fucking mystery, and the people in your apartment block were also involved in solving that mystery, how would you approach it? How do you think they would deal with the consequences as a group of people in like a real world? How do you think normal people would react to crazy circumstances? That's kind of the idea of it. To give you an idea of the context, the main character moves into an apartment block and shit just goes weird in that apartment block. For example, there's a lot of like faux science in this.
Is it by semi-cool. Peter Kleins?
Peter Kleins, that's correct. Okay. So, for example, he walks into his apartment block. One of the first things he notices is after he purchases it and puts down his deposit and moves in, any light, no matter what light he puts into his kitchen, shines black light.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that obviously doesn't make physics sense. So stuff like that. It's like weird little intriguing mysteries that are not stupid. It's not like, oh, there's a door. Well, that is actually one of them. Oh, there's a wall here that's extra wide. Actually, that's one of them too. There's crazy stuff, but yeah, it's approached in very interesting ways. It's a very interesting book. I think it falls apart in the last 10 chapters in that I'm not particularly interested in Cthulhu. Like Cthulhu fiction has never really...
You know, like Lovecraft?
Yeah, Lovecraft has never been a thing for me. And he is referenced pretty heavily in this book. That's not really a spoiler. But yeah, so 14 by Peter Kleins. It's what I've been reading this week. It's pretty good. Aside from that, not much. That's all. So thank you for listening to the Scotchcast. Episode 1 or 3.
2.
Depending how you count. Yeah.
Guys, there's going to be a wizardry online.
I don't know what that is.
Wizardry, you know, the old wizardry game.
That's a wizard.
Never mind.